year.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Connor McKnight, Mark Carmen.
The Beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Thank you, Steve Harvey.
Happy Easter, according to Steve Harvey.
That's the best part about The Beat. When it's Panionovich and Mazur,
yeah.
And we still hear from Hoge, Carmen, McKnight,
that's okay.
Peyton. We're here. They're off.
We're here.
They're celebrating.
It's all good. We're here.
They're watching bowl game number 7 of 40. Welcome to The Beat, 720 WGN. I'm Sam Panionovich. He's Andy Mazur, filling in for you on this holiday Saturday, and there's plenty to get to.
Oh, yeah.
There's plenty to get to. We can involve pretty much every professional team on the docket today.
Very true. I mean, Bulls with a nice win yesterday. About time we saw a little effort out of them, and it's certainly good to see, despite those awful-looking uniforms that they were forced to wear by the NBA. You know, Northwestern coming up. I got the bowl game, the Outback Bowl coming up. A little basketball as well for them. How about Chris Collins, 11-1? I mean, everybody could argue they haven't played exactly the strongest schedule, but you still got to win the games you play. And plus, you know, the Big Ten is going to be obviously a big conference this year for the NCAA.
Blackhawks starting to find a groove here as we approach January. The outdoor game coming up in Minnesota. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. The Bears sort of
season's coming to an end. Thank
limping
goodness.
To the finish line. Some are running to the finish line. John Fox can't wait to get out of these press
conferences.
Some are
sitting it out.
He just can't. He's like, 2 minutes and I'm gone.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we had the Cubs and White Sox have a pretty nice month of December, active, aggressive, making moves. I'm sure there are still a couple maybe minor tweaks for both teams, but the heavy lifting done.
Tell you what, I was impressed with what Rick Hahn was able to do. You know, you talk about December 9th when he gets Brett Laurie from Oakland, and everybody's pressing him, well, is he going to be your starting third baseman? And he was very careful, and it was if you listen to what he said, he said, yeah, if opening day were today, he would be our third baseman, but he does have the ability to play second. So he's going to play second, and Todd Frazier's going to play third. I think it's a pretty nice little infield he got.
For me, yesterday, though, Christmas basketball was on the docket. For the casual fan that's been sort of looped into football, and, of course, you've got the NFL and you've got college, a lot of high school teams, people that have kids that play high school football, pretty much all over with now for the most part. Your regular seasons are done in both sports, both high school and college. You've got a week or two left in the NFL. So for the casual fan, yesterday is the tip-off for the NBA, and you were joking earlier about there used to be two teams,
that
one
was it.
Game.
It was exclusive. It was like, you know, it was a big deal to play on Christmas Day.
Celtics-Lakers.
Yeah.
Bulls-Knicks.
Yeah, Bulls-Pistons, you know, whatever it was at that point, you know, whatever the rivalries were.
Now we have 38-year-old Kobe Bryant finishing off a five-game dip against, who did they play? Who did the Lakers play last night?
The Clippers.
Oh, it was the Clippers. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, Lakers and Clip Show. And I thought it was interesting, too, with the Cavaliers and the Warriors game. I don't know if everybody followed on Twitter or saw the vine that was going around with LeBron James.
The lady in the front row?
The lady in the front row getting ready to call him a crybaby with her fist kind of rotating by her eyes. He spies back, and she kind of cowers and stops. Come on. Sitting in the front row, you're going to have to pay. You go through with it, lady. Come on.
He caught her, too.
Yeah.
Red-handed.
Have some conviction. If you're gonna start the process, finish the process.
I love those uniforms.
I thought they were good.
You hated them.
They're
Why?
Ridiculous.
What's wrong
it's
with you?
It's just stupid. It's Christmas Day. Wear your uniform.
They had the Christmas font. They had the Christmas numbers and the socks and shoes.
Don't
D'Angelo
fool
Russell
yourself.
Had pink, aqua, teal, orange.
This is all about selling jerseys.
And shoes and socks. Every team had a special pair of socks.
Wear your own uniform. What? Everybody knows.
Christmas.
Everybody knows.
Who
okay,
cares?
So
it's one day
put
out of the
Santa
year.
Hats on them. I don't care.
Sponsored by Reese's.
Gosh, it just drives me crazy, and it drives me crazy in Major League Baseball when they try to take advantage of patriotic holidays. You know, Memorial Day, they have different hats. They're not being patriotic. They're trying to sell hats.
The NBA has done a great job, though, of branding their sport around a holiday.
Yeah. No,
they've done the best. They've
they
done the
Christmas
best.
Day.
I don't signify maybe football and Thanksgiving, but the NBA has kicked the door down, and they're trying to get to the next door.
Yeah. The NHL is starting to do some nice damage there with the Winter Classic on New Year's Day as well. Because, you know, now you have the big bowl games aren't on New Year's Day anymore. You know, they're the day before, the day after, a couple days after, and then now a week or two after.
Northwestern plays New Year's Day, Year's morning, essentially, against Tennessee in the Outback Bowl. We'll talk about that as well. The Illini, I don't think they're in a bowl.
Okay, I'm not going there.
Although, it's funny, we talked about the 40 bowl games. They were actually begging teams that were 5-6, please, yeah, we need you, because there weren't enough 6-6 teams to qualify all the spots, 80 spots, and I don't think there were 80 teams that had 500 records or better.
No, and the only reason that the Illini didn't go is because their classroom scores weren't high enough. And that's the reason that they weren't in a bowl game. Could you imagine after all that turmoil, after Beckman's fired at the beginning of the year, 2 weeks before the season or a week before the season, the AD is out, the chancellor is out. This guy comes in, Bill Cubitt, runs their team, and then now gets a contract extension. They win 5 games, and they end up going to a bowl game. But that's not going to happen.
We're also going to play a game later on in the show. We're going to give you a big pizza from Lou Malnati's, enough to purchase yourself. If there's any lingerers from Christmas, from the holiday season that you can't get out of your house, we're going to play a game there. We're going to ask, what would you buy or return for your favorite Chicago team? We've got pizza to give away.
Yeah. I don't qualify, but I have some thoughts.
favorite Christmas gifts as well. I've got a couple in the back of my mind. But they're going to make you feel old with some of the gifts that I got. The Michael Jordan jersey from 1993 is going to make you feel a little tired.
Already, yeah. 1993, that's right. You were like a little kid at that point, weren't you?
Yeah.
So was I, at heart.
312-981-7200. We'll get into a little more basketball next and talk about exactly what John Pax has said, what he means. I don't believe some of the things that they say, because Gar Forman told you before the year this was a championship team.
Yeah.
Now John Paxson is talking about the process. Starting to make some excuses.
It is a process. Speaking of the Bulls, tonight it's the Texas-sized matchup on WGN-TV. Bulls in Dallas take on the Mavs. Bulls-Mavericks tonight at 7 on WGN-TV.
WGN. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Merry Festivus. Happy Festivus.
Happy Festivus. It's a Festivus for the rest of us.
I get confused.
It's okay.
You have to lecture me sometimes. He's Andy Mazur.
Tinsel is distracting, too, by the way.
I'm Sam Paniadovich. By the way, got a note from Ken Berger here, CBS. The NBA had 5 Christmas Day games. That's the 13th time they've done it. This was the first time they were all decided by 10 points or less.
Yeah, there were some good games. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. I'm more of a casual NBA fan these days than I used to be, and obviously I will completely admit to getting back on the Bulls bandwagon when they had that crazy series against the Celtics a few years back. But I don't know. I mean, I just feel like they're kind of oversaturating it still a little bit with that many games on Christmas Day when it used to be a real special kind of event. You know, Bulls Knicks and things of that nature. You know, I don't mind featuring the best teams because they're going to get you the best ratings and probably going to draw the most interest. I have no problem with that. So if the Bulls aren't one of the best teams, certainly they shouldn't be there. But, you know, maybe one, maybe two games, but not 5.
If you watched NBA basketball yesterday, you saw those Chicago Bulls somehow, some way. And it was funny. I'm sitting there. My mom and dad are at home. They're getting ready to prepare all the food. My brother's on the way home. And they're like, well, what do you think? I said, watch the Bulls win.
Yeah.
Watch them go out and just win, because nobody expects them to. Thunder had won 9 out of 10. Bulls streaky, up and down, left and right, in and out. Can't do anything right over a short period of time. And they did. They beat the Thunder 105-96. Even though Kevin Durant almost had 30 points, the Bulls find a way. And if you haven't been watching the NBA, if you started your season yesterday as a fan, you're in for a treat, because this team is going to do nothing but frustrate the hell out of you.
Yeah. All right, let me ask you this, because we haven't had a chance to talk about the Jimmy Butler deal with supposedly backtracking, calling out his coach and some of his team. Now, I get it from Jimmy Butler's perspective, where he's trying to, you know, kind of show everybody this is his team. And you know what? I kind of agree that it is his team. He's one of the highest paid players on the team. He's probably the best overall and all-around player on the team.
He is.
But after X number of games early in a year and trying to transition from the, for lack of a better word, dictatorial style of Thibs to now more of a country club, what it seems like. And again, I'm not there every day, and I'm not trying to make that as a as a dig on Fred Hoiberg, but you know, it's obviously night and day to the accountability and to the yelling and the screaming and the do your job, that kind of stuff, to what it is now. Was it the right time, first of all, and was it something that somebody maybe prompted him to do?
I think it was all on his shoulders, okay, to be honest with you, because that's the role he's trying to assume. It's, if you don't think I'm a leader, if you're on the fence about me being a leader, I'm going to show you that I am a leader. And he's trying to hold people accountable. I think the biggest leaders in that locker room last year, if we turn the page back to 14-15, the biggest leader is Thibodeau.
Yeah.
I mean, he ran that thing like boot camp.
Yeah.
So he was in charge. And I think his highest lieutenant, as far as being a leader, being vocal, holding people accountable, was Joakim Noah.
Right.
So Tibbs is gone. And one of the first things that Fred Hoiberg did, and this was probably a decision that was handed from above, was to pull Noah out of the starting lineup. So you've silenced the voice that remains on the team. You kicked the last voice off to the curb. Who's in charge now?
Yeah.
And Jimmy Butler saw the green light, because it's not going to be Derrick Rose.
It can't be.
He just doesn't care.
Well, and he hasn't played
enough. He doesn't care to be a vocal leader.
Right.
He wants to play as well as he can, but that's a different story for a different day.
Yeah.
Noah is sort of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. He's off the books at the end of the year, might not be here next year. So Jimmy Butler sees Main Street all lit up, and he called out his rookie head coach after 25 games.
I found it interesting with the timing and the words, and then, you know, kind of covering it up toward the end by saying, you know, and me included, you know. Okay, you know, that was kind of an afterthought, I thought.
That was the cherry at the end of the sundae.
Exactly.
The bottom of the bowl.
Right. I'm glad that if nothing else, it caused kind of a pause over there at the Advocate Center, where, you know, it was time for Fred Hoiberg and Jimmy to kind of clear the air a little bit. They said they had a good meeting. I mean, they're not going to come out and say they had a terrible meeting, but it certainly looked on the surface that they had a pretty productive, for lack of a better word, meeting. But then, you know, it didn't translate. It didn't translate onto the court. It was the same thing that we saw over and over and over. A lack of, it just looked like they didn't care. It looked like they just did not play to the ability that they have. And then to have your vice president or whatever, you know, come out and say, you got to play like we used to play. You know, you got to get out there and play.
I hate that, too.
I know. It's a different era. And it's obviously a different NBA than it was when John Paxson was winning titles, you know, with the Bulls. But why in this day and age does it always seem like you have to be reminded that you're being paid to go out and play as hard as you can? Why isn't that just a given?
Yeah, and Paxson went on local radio too, and Casey Johnson did the write-up of it in the Trib, the highlights of that segment, that interview. And the gist of it was, let's stop talking and start executing.
Yeah, but isn't that always the way it's supposed to be done?
Well, I guess some players nowadays feel the need to be reminded that they need to go out there and earn a living. You know, some guys just take the nights off, and that's this team. That's the way it is, I'm telling you. If you waited until Christmas Day to watch your first Bulls basketball game, and there are a lot of people that are in that category, they think, well, you know, I'll get into it when football is coming to an end.
Right.
This team is going to go out there, and some nights they're going to be the best team in the league. Some nights they'll lose to the Bobcats or the Hornets, whatever they call themselves now.
Yeah, I think they're the Hornets again. Yeah.
They're the Hornets again.
Yeah, because the Pelicans
lost to the Nets.
New Orleans, yeah.
Lost to the Knicks.
Yeah.
Lost to the Magic.
Oh, I hear you. And it is frustrating to watch, even as a casual kind of observer, you know, with a little bit of a dog in the fight, just because, you know, we cover them and things of that nature. And you want their teams to win. It's much easier to talk about, you know, when we have shows like this, that if they're doing well. I don't know. I'm a huge fan of Joakim Noah. I like the way he plays. I like the energy that he brings. Maybe he's a little limited offensively, you know, as far as today's NBA is concerned. I love the way that the Bulls kind of lucked into Pau Gasol. I mean, I think he's been a nice little...
He came here because they thought they could win a championship.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's why he came to Chicago. And I think he's sort of second-guessing that right now, because he's won a couple rings. Mm-hmm. He knows what it takes. He knows the effort and the work you have to put in. And there are a couple guys that do it. A lot of guys just don't, and it's clear which ones don't.
Yeah. Did it seem to you like yesterday that Derrick Rose had a little bit more of a mean streak in him? He was yelling at that official. Come on. No, really?
Him and Westbrook always are like that, though, because they trained together in the offseason.
Gotcha.
They came out in the same year, 2008, Rose out of Memphis, Westbrook out of UCLA. They have the same trainer. I think his name's Rob McClanahan in L.A., and they've been sort of pushing each other for years now. So that always brings out the best of Rose.
Yeah.
Problem is, when they're playing the Bobcats or the Hornets or the Pelicans
or the Mavericks tonight
or the Baltimore Bullets,
yeah,
get lost in which teams are real anymore.
The Buffalo
Braves.
He just doesn't
bring it. And there were a couple times yesterday where we're watching it, and he's on the fast break. It's like a 3-on-1, and he pulls up from 18 feet, takes a step back, and tries to bank it in.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
There was a lot of that going on yesterday with
fast
breaks. Jimmy Butler a couple of times, too, and who else was it? It wasn't Portis. It was somebody else. I can't remember who it was. On a fast break, step back. Okay, so it's 3-on-1. You have a better odds if you miss it, someone's going to get it, but why don't you put it closer to the basket?
One of the other highlights from the John Paxson conversations that have happened in the last week was that the trade talks are quiet in the most breaking news of all time. When are they not quiet in Chicago? They don't step up to the plate. They don't make big trades.
No. I mean, because before that whole deal went down, you were hearing they're trying to actively trade Gasol. They're trying to actively trade Noah. I mean, okay, what are you going to do? I mean, you come out at the beginning of the year, you say that Thibs was basically the reason you didn't get over the hump. Okay? Now, umpteen years ago, Doug Collins was that same kind of victim. And luckily for them, Phil Jackson was the right guy to hire, and Phil Jackson took them from point B to point C, C equaling championships. Is Fred Hoiberg that guy? I don't, it's kind of hard to assess after 26, 27 games, but you've already had a couple of meltdowns here in less than 30 games.
They thought he could be Steve Kerr. Now, Steve Kerr goes to the Warriors. Yeah. They had pushed Mark Jackson out the door. By the way, did you catch what Jackson said yesterday about Steph Curry?
Yeah, that he's hurting the game.
The MVP of the NBA is hurting the game of basketball.
Can you say sour grapes?
First time that he's actually thrown salt on his former team and a player on that team.
Mm-hmm.
He makes a valid point. I don't think the word selection was good enough.
No, it was terrible.
And the showcase was awful.
Yeah.
You pick that day, finals rematch to bring that. He said that when he goes and watches high school players now, all they do is run to the three-point line, and that's Steph Curry's fault.
You know, and Curry took the high road and said that he'd have to have a chat with him. He said, but, if you can shoot it, shoot. If you keep missing, don't shoot it. And there's not a lot of Steph Currys out there. I thought Andrew Bogut probably had it better off when he was saying, take what that guy says with a grain of salt. And he said you can quote me on that. Mark Jackson was the coach there, and I just didn't seem like he got along with anybody.
I know he upset a lot of people because he didn't want to play golf all the time. That was his line. I don't want to play golf. I want to watch film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to play golf. I'm bad at it. Do you golf? I'm awful. Yeah. I'll drive the cart around.
I play. I actually had a pretty good summer this year for me. I mean, I had a pretty good summer golfing.
Which means what?
I broke 90 for the first time in my life.
That's good, right?
Yeah. A couple times, actually.
Most courses are what? What's the par? 70?
72.
Okay, 72.
Usually. Yeah, 72, 71. Sometimes you get a 70.
One time I went out, I think I had a 114.
Hey, you know what? The thing about golf.
Sober, too.
The thing about golf is that it's something you go out and do with your buddies. It's better than being at work.
Got to get better.
You go out and you have a little fun in the sun. You know, you have maybe a couple of pops here and there. And 4 hours later, you have a bunch of great stories. Doesn't matter how
I need
you
to
play.
Get better. That's the lesson learned here. At least be more patient. Because on hole four, when I chip one into the trees.
Yeah, you can't. See, now here's the thing. Golf is one of these thinking man kind of thing, and that's what gets me in trouble a lot of time. The biggest thing you have.
Just hit it.
The biggest thing you can't bring with you is your brain, okay? You got to take your brain out of play. It's the truth. And you hit one bad shot, you can't let it snowball into a second bad shot or a third. Kind of like shooting, kind of like Steph Curry. You know, you can't let one bad release affect the fact that he's going to go out and shoot another one.
I'm in. Yeah. Maybe we'll talk more about this later.
All right, let's do it.
He's Andy Mazur. I'm Sam Panionovich. News is next, 720 WGN. Welcome back to The Beat, 720 WGN. Andy Mazur to my right. I'm Sam Panionovich, 312-981-7200. We came into the news talking about golf and how poor I am at it, and you tried to give me some tips.
Well, here's the thing. The thing about golf is it's not a sport for most of us that you can just kind of say, all right, I'll play tomorrow, then I'll wait a couple of months, and then I'll pick them up again in 3 weeks and think you're going to be any good at it. It just doesn't happen.
Rogers Hornsby once said, remember the famous quote? I don't want to play golf. When I hit a ball, I want someone else to go chase it. I agree with that. Yeah. I don't want to run in the woods and muck up the shoes and, you know, I can't find my beer. Uh-huh. I lost my fourth golf ball.
Well, if you lose your beer, then you're really doing it
but
wrong.
But that golf is the type of game, and I have such a respect for guys that are so good at golf. And a lot of friends that I have at the amateur level, you mentioned the 190-80 rule where you want to break 100.
Yeah, for the amateurs.
Then 90 and then 80. I got some friends that shoot 75.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Wake up out of bed and go shoot 75. That's a game, though. It shatters you if you don't have any patience.
Oh, yeah.
It ruins your day.
It will. It will. I mean, it costs you four and a half hours, depending on where you're playing, too. So, I mean, it's just not it's not over in 10 minutes.
Howard joins us now on 720 WGN. Hey, Howard. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, Annie and Sam. Hey, I was just going to say, I'm right in your league. If I play 20 times in the summer, I can shoot 85. But otherwise, I'm a 100-105 guy. But the best line I ever heard, my brother told me years ago, you got to remember when you're playing golf, just turn to the guys you're with and go, you should have seen the shot I was going to hit.
That's a good one.
I like that.
That's really good.
I'm going to add that to the list here.
Yeah,
it works for everything, you know? Whether you hit a good shot or a bad shot, you can always hit it better, right?
Yeah. I usually get on the green at the par fives, and I'll tap in from my double bogey and say, from the tees, we were playing this is a par seven, right? Yeah, and I get the blank looks saying, no, put that down to seven. Thank you.
There's a family friend that, and this was the old story, that every time he would go out to play golf, he would hit some of the worst tee shots imaginable. But somehow his ball would always end up on the green. So there was this theory that he had boys on the green, you know, just kind of spitting the ball out. Right on. You have friends like that, Howard, that have boys on the green?
I train the squirrels at the places I play.
Nice.
Take it up and drop it near the hall.
Got to have friends.
Thanks for checking in, Howard. Take care.
Happy holidays, guys.
Have a nice day.
All right, you too. Take care.
Boys on the green, though.
Yeah.
Because he'd whack one, you know, and, you know, it's a terrible slice going way off the fairway. And then you get to the course and, oh, there's my ball.
See, the problem with me is that I golf left-handed. So it's always a treat when I go and play with all my right-handed buddies because generally, we see each other at the tee box and at the green because I'm going this way, they're going that way. And it's a little frustrating for me at that time because I'm always convinced that these courses were made for right-handers. You know, that's my built-in excuse right there.
I'm down for putt-putt. Yeah. I'll go play miniature golf.
See, putt-putt just bores me now.
The driving range. I go to the driving range.
Yeah.
I get embarrassed.
Are you a driving range pro or what?
No, okay. I am. No, I'm in rookie ball. I'm a 26-year-old rookie. Banging around in Kannapolis,
yeah.
You know, like I can't. It's embarrassing. It is.
You know, the worst time to go to the driving range for me is the first time I pull the clubs out of the bag for, you know, like I said, for like 2 or 3 months. My parents winter in Florida, so I go down there and I play with my dad, and I have to go to the driving range before I play because I haven't swung a club in forever. And that first trip there, it's, you know, like that scene in Tin Cup. Who chili dipped that one? Hey, who's hitting those? I mean, scattering people.
I still play basketball. I'll go to the gym with some friends. There's a couple of men's leagues around here. I'll go lace them up, and I'll still play hoops. And for me, maybe that's your golf. You know, I still shoot pretty well, and I can do that. But I'll go to the driving range, and I'm, you know, putting the ball on the tee or off the tee. And, you know, I'm hitting one about 150. Like, maybe it's straight 1 out of 5 times. And then I kid you not, Andy, I look to my right, and there's this 10-year-old kid pumping him 250. And I'm embarrassed.
But don't be embarrassed, because here's the thing. That kid has been taking lessons since he was 5, okay?
Doesn't matter.
He's been playing since he was 5.
I am a foot taller than him,
it
and I have 100 pounds on him.
This is not a strength game. This is actually let me try to explain this to you, because this is not about how big or physically strong you are. This is about how you can repeat a motion to keep the club head from hitting the ball at a square impact point. It's if you're a millimeter off, the ball's going a different way.
I'm a millimeter off.
Okay.
A lot.
Maybe you're about 2 or 3 millimeters off. That's all right.
BP is on the phone now, 312-981-7200, talking golf on a holiday Saturday with Andy and Sam. What's going on, BP?
Hey, guys. We have a solution for us hackers, and especially now that it's winter. It's the new Top Golf joint there in Naperville. Have you been?
No,
have not.
It is absolutely the funnest thing I've ever done. Funner than Disney World. It's a 3-story tall glorified golf range. And the original one's in Whitdale, but this one's state-of-the-art. And you rent a pot. You can get six guys in the pot. They serve drinks, good food. And you tee up your ball. The ball's got a GPS chip. And you go after these targets out like 150 yards deep.
And you own the place, right? It sounds like you own the place.
I'm telling you, I'm starting the league in January. It's the funnest stuff I've ever done in winter.
Now, I've driven past on the expressway, and maybe this isn't the exact one in that location, or so to speak, but I've driven past like some of the domes, right? Is that what you're talking about? Or like it's an indoor facility where you can go in and play golf?
Absolutely not. It's outdoors.
Oh, wow.
I'm out there in a polo shirt that last snowstorm we had, and they've got three heat lamps, and you can adjust the heat, and you're hitting balls outside. It's amazing, and I want you fellas to check it out. I don't own it, but I'm a huge fan.
All right, VP, we'll check it out.
Thanks
for
VP.
Calling in.
Appreciate it.
Happy New Year, guys.
You too. You know, I go over to the Chicago Park District facility at Diversey, and I went there for the first time actually this summer. Or this spring, and I was pleasantly surprised that they're open year-round. And I went by there yesterday with the thought of, maybe I'll go and hit a couple of balls. They actually have the windscreens down, and they do have heated stalls in there, too. So it's open.
My friend Wags he's a little crazy.
I have a friend Wags, too. Maybe it's the same guy.
He plays winter golf. He'll go out, and some
Why
of these
not?
Courses down on the southeast side of the city, they open the courses.
Yeah.
Snow on the ground. They give you an orange
ball. Yeah.
Like it's a neon ball. And when you strike it, you can sort of see the taillight as it goes through the sky. And then when it lands in the snow, they try and dust off the fairways and the greens as best they can. But if you hit it in the rough or beyond,
good luck.
You're not finding it.
Yeah. And your day is done.
But he goes out there, 20 degrees, boots on. Parka.
Hey, there are people that swear up and down by this because I used to play when I was in high school with a bunch of my friends at a muni course in Morton Grove, and rain, shine or otherwise, I mean, we played in. You remember that scene in Caddyshack where the bishop goes out and shooting the round of his life and it's wind and it's sideways. I played in a monsoon, just because you go out there and you love it. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. I mean, otherwise, you're inside, sipping hot chocolate or whatever. I was out there. It took me like 3 days to dry my clothes, but I still played. It's a badge of honor.
Brave the elements.
Or just stupidity. I can't decide which.
John wants to hop in here, 312-981-7200, talking some golf on Chicago's very own. Hey, John, what's going on?
How you guys doing today?
Good, John.
Real quick, one piece of advice is just to remember that you're not good enough to get mad when you're golfing.
That was what somebody told me one time.
Yeah. The other thing my dad used to tell me all the time, I'd tell him I was going to go golfing, he couldn't go. He'd say, let me know how the mushrooms are doing.
The mushrooms. All right.
Like yeah, well that. Off the fairway is what he's...
What do you shoot, John, when you go play, if you do, assuming you do?
So nowadays... mid-80s, low 90s usually.
But you have fun no matter what, right? I mean, that's the key. You have to try and have fun.
Yeah, I even laugh at the bad shots, and there are plenty of those to laugh at.
You kind of have to at some point, right? Maybe like you said, figuring in your piece of advice that none of us are good enough.
The guys I golf with are a really good scrambler.
That's the key, because if you hit a bad tee shot, you still give yourself a chance.
See, I'm always concerned, though. One time I was at a golf outing, John, and obviously I've been talking about it for 15 minutes. I'm not very good, but it was a foursome, and we played best ball.
Yeah.
But my ball was always the worst ball, and for some reason I took that personal. Maybe I'm thinking of this whole thing wrong.
Yeah, just go out and have a good time. Don't worry about it. Laugh at your really bad shots, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, you have to subscribe to the blind squirrel and the acorn theory.
It's tough.
Oh, and also remember, don't ever try to hit the ball. Just
okay, now I don't know anything.
The club's got to do all the work. He's exactly right.
Thanks, John. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John.
Now I'm told not even to try and hit the ball.
No, you let the club do all the work for you. Pick out the right club. You got to learn your distances. For me, I'm a lot less of a hitter than, like the big boys like Cochran, who, shoot, 70s and 80s because he plays a lot.
He shoots 70s?
Yeah, he's pretty good. His distances are going to be different than mine. I bought a bunch of the hybrid clubs because I think that they're easier to hit. 4-5 hybrid, you know, I could probably hit a 5 hybrid. Usually I hit it like 160. 5 hybrid for some of these guys is 210, you know, but it doesn't matter. You know your limitations, and you know what club you hit straight. That's the key.
Let's bring in Mike here to wrap up the golf segment, 720 WGN. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, I learned a long time ago I don't keep score. I just go out for the fun of it, and if I hit some good shots, hey, good.
Yeah.
And I don't worry about score. You guys are always talking about, you know, on the 80s, 90s, 100s. It don't matter to me. I go out there for the fresh air, the walk, and the camaraderie, and that's the whole deal, man.
Lots of green, bright sun.
You got to figure it out.
Get a little tan. Yeah. You're way beyond your years, Mike, in wisdom, because if I had your golf wisdom now, I think I'd probably try and go out there a little bit more. But I'm jaded because when somebody tries to always be a perfectionist at things, golf is not your game.
You cannot be a golfer and a perfectionist. The two do not.
They're not mutually exclusive. Yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah, I agree with you.
Maybe God is.
Yeah.
Maybe God can golf that way, but you and I don't think so.
Good
so
call.
I'm sounding, or it's sounding like I can fail at golf and it's okay.
Of course,
right. Merry Christmas.
All right, Mike.
You too, Mike. You know, I hate to keep quoting Caddyshack, but you know Ty Webb, you know Chevy Chase's character never kept score, and they asked him how he measures himself against other golfers, and he says by height. I don't subscribe to that same theory for obvious reasons, because I'd always be last. But Mike brings up a good point. I mean, it's difficult for me. I'm competitive in everything. And, you know, you have to understand, too, when you go out and play golf with a bunch of your buddies and say one of your buddies is like a 5 or 6 handicap and, you know, I'm sitting here at an 18, 19, 20, depending on the day, you're not playing against him. You're playing against yourself in the course. So you're not really playing against the guys you're with, even though it seems like you are.
I feel like I've learned a lot here.
I'm going to make you into a golfer. We're going to go out as soon as the weather clears a little bit. I'd even play on a day like today if I had the chance.
It could be a nice little thing here. What if I end up winning a green jacket?
That's what I mean. Green jacket, gold jacket, you know, whatever.
I just want a jacket.
I hear you. So, yeah, we're going to go out. That's definitely going to happen. And it's funny that Mike brought that up about not keeping score. I play golf every once in a while on a Saturday morning with my dad and a bunch of his friends, and there's one guy in particular who is just content to go out there and play, and I always ask his score. He goes, I don't keep. Okay, good. Hey, congratulations. More power. I wish I could do that.
I love how nobody, and of all those callers, nobody said, we just get really drunk. I think that's sort of like the underlying
theme. Yeah, it's implied.
With that, but
some people play better. Some people play a lot worse.
Because some guys, like if they were sober, they'd go out there and they'd struggle. But they have a couple tall boys.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, fairway.
Lowers your inhibitions and your
your care level
and your care level and the other term that's thrown around in golf a lot is paralysis by analysis. you think so much about what you're supposed to do that you think too much and you don't do what you're supposed to do. So I think that there may be 2 or 3 tall boys and you're not really thinking about the golf swing so much as where the next porta potty is.
He's Andy Mazur. I'm Sam Panionovich. I have an idea for a bowl game. Let's talk about this next. We have so many of them. This is a bowl game, though, I think you would like to watch because there's a lot at stake. We'll talk about that next. 720 WGN. Coming up on 4 o'clock. Chicago's very own 720 WGN Radio. Sam Panionovich and Andy Mazur with you until 7 o'clock, talking sports, talking golf, talking life.
Whatever you need, we're here for you.
I feel like I am ready to climb back on and redo this whole golf thing.
Yeah, I think I was showing Sam a couple of tips that I picked up. I'd never taken a lesson before. I think it's just repetition, getting out there and doing it. I've always been one of those that can learn better by watching somebody else do it than actually being told how to do it. So I watch some of those PGA events and I kind of think, okay, well, what's this guy doing? All right, cool. I'm not going to be Bubba Watson golfing left-handed, but, I can see what he does with his hands and what he does with his shoulders and with his hips, and, I kind of learn a little thing.
1 hour from now, we're going to talk to Todd Furman. He used to run the sports book at Caesars out in Vegas. He's now working for CBS Sports. The Chicago Cubs are the favorite to win the World Series in Vegas. Yeah. Although they're not really the favorite, and Tom's going to help us sort of break that down. But they are, if you walk into a sports book in Las Vegas, they have the best odds to win it all.
It's about the money being bet on them right now anyway. And I think that, you know, everybody that kind of looks at what the moves that were made over the offseason and probably the boldest moves were made by the Cubs. I think that they really helped themselves in a number of areas that they were very short in last year. I think that Mets series certainly showed that they needed another quality starting pitcher. And they went out and got John Lackey, even at 37 years of age. Looks like, you know, he's actually 36 in pitching because he missed the year with the Tommy John. Actually, a year and a half because he came back and only pitched in 10 games in the following year. So, you know, relatively young in that, but a competitive guy that knows the quote-unquote Boston way, you know, with Lester and with Theo and everybody else around there. So, you know, that was a good one. I think the underrated move to me is the Zobrist move because he's DeRosa light to me.
After Todd Hobbs signed at 450, we're going to do the pizza giveaway. We're going to give you a pizza if you give us the best buyer return list for Chicago sports. We'll do that at about 5 o'clock. And then Adam Hoag, our Bears insider, to preview Bears and Bucks. That'll be at 6 o'clock. But I teased this already, so we got to go here. Okay. There are 40 bowl games now, and reading some of these games, the Marmo Boca Raton Bowl, the San Diego County Poinsettia Bowl, the Popeyes Bahamas Bowl, the St. Petersburg Bowl, the New Era Pinstripe Bowl. All right, the teams all suck, too.
The Idaho Famous Potato Bowl.
That's the problem. I mean, we've had so many bad games. You know, North Carolina A&T against Alcorn State. That was the Celebration Bowl. So here's my idea, Andy. You take the two worst teams every year in Division I that had the worst records. We're talking 0-11, 1-10, something like that. You put them somewhere just awful. You put them in Alaska, or you put them in, you know, Las Cruces, New Mexico, and then they play in the middle of nowhere. And the losing team has to go down to Division II for a year.
So you're taking a little soccer theory into this whole thing?
You want to be the worst team? Let's prove it. We're going to put the worst team in Division I, we're going to knock them down a peg. And the incentive is to, you know, if you're a coach trying to, you know, do whatever. Some coaches are just crazy, and they think that maybe losing is going to somehow turn the thing around. You know, some are crazy. But you take the two worst teams, you put them in the worst location. Tell me that wouldn't get right. Tell me you wouldn't watch that game.
Well, you know, I think you can call it the Irrelevant Bowl.
Call it whatever you want.
Yeah, you know, and you can maybe have, like, companies that are gone sponsor it.
Sponsored by Enron.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that would be interesting.
Because you've got some players there. You know, if you're a freshman or a sophomore.
Yeah, you want to be playing Division
I. You want to play professional football. You're not going to get many looks playing Division II.
Okay. I don't want to throw a wrench into this whole thing. But now, how do you get back into D1?
I haven't figured that out yet.
Okay. Because that would be kind of like a pretty bad thing to have to stay there at all, you know, if there's no way to get out of it.
Like Division II hell?
Well, yeah. I mean,
you go there for 1 year.
Exactly.
And then...
I mean, I could just imagine if, you know, this was the old days of, you know, Navy not winning ever, you know, or Army going 0-99 or whatever, you know, and just all of a sudden we're stuck in Division II. We're never going to get out.
I just can't imagine those, you know, just from the coaching standpoint.
That's a lot of pressure.
But that's what makes it great.
That's a lot of pressure. That would, you know what, I would rather watch that than like the Copper Bowl or you know, the Gardenia Bowl or whatever it is, you know? I mean,
Texter says you can call it the Clorox Toilet Bowl.
Nice. Tidy Bowl Man. He can be the mascot.
And you put it somewhere, you know, you could go to like Upper Peninsula, Minnesota or Upper Peninsula, Michigan, you know, where it's bone-chillingly cold and it's 5 degrees. You can't even start your car.
Yeah, that's not one that you ever want to play in a dome or anything like that. And I think you maybe force the teams, if it's like 12 degrees, to wear short sleeves.
No Gatorade,
no Gatorade,
water.
No heated benches.
And in this game, a lot of the bowl games, players get flat-screen TVs.
Yeah.
They get, you know, nice watches with diamonds on them. You get a PS4, Xbox One.
This is one you get like an Atari 64.
Yeah.
Good luck finding somewhere to play that.
You get Duck Hunt, no gun.
Exactly.
Old school video game style. You get nothing that you would ever want in 2015.
You get canoe, no paddle.
You get the original iPod.
You get helmet, no face mask.
I would do it. I think people would watch it. I don't think it would ever happen, but that's...
And if your quarterback is right-handed, he's got to throw left-handed.
The game would be 3-0, by the way.
It would be awesome.
Both teams would already be bad enough as it is.
Needs a little pep up on a day like today. Nice and gloomy and rainy and otherwise ugly here in the city of Chicago. Andy Mazur and Sam Panayotovich sitting in here on the beat on 720 WGN. We're with you until 7 o'clock. Lots more to get to as well. And as we were alluding to last hour, we're going to have a little bit of a contest, and pizza is up for grabs.
If you're hungry, you should listen.
Pizza is up for grabs.
And you're usually hungry four times a day.
Yeah, five, six, seven, eight times a day.
If you're a bodybuilder, you eat 10 times a day.
Exactly.
So I'm told.
I'm not a bodybuilder. Well, I'm building, yeah. You know, I said I'm getting in shape, and round is a shape. I was thinking about, you know, during the holiday season, about everybody's fascination with buying gifts. And then, you know, what do you do today? You go out and return what you didn't like. And, you know, it's a happy Boxing Day to all those Canadians as well. So I thought maybe we could talk about a little bit what you would buy and what you might return for your favorite Chicago sports team. Now, for example, if you're kind of looking for what I'm thinking about here, I was thinking more on the lines of, okay, for the Blackhawks, I would buy them a little more salary cap relief, and I would return Brian Bickle's 4-year contract. I mean, that's just kind of how I would do it. And, you know, you can have creative ways of expressing this. Again, it doesn't have to be for the Chicago sports teams. Of course, we'd like you to be one of the Chicago sports teams if you could keep it to that way. But we'll do that after 5 o'clock. And, again, pizza will be on the line for that at 312-981-7200. The best one will take some Lou Malnati's pizza.
Can I win this?
No, you can't.
Oh, because I got a good one. I'll save it. I'm going to still throw it out there a little bit later on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you be creative.
There's a lot of stuff out there you can think about. You know, you could, it doesn't even really have to be involving players per se. I mean, it could be like, you know, like I said, you could return a bad contract, or you could buy out the bad contract for a team. And, yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see some of these thoughts that folks may have.
Can I buy my way up the Blackhawks season ticket holder list?
That would be nice, huh? Because it's a long, long list right now.
It didn't used to be that way.
I get it.
Back 7 years ago, the team's not even on TV.
Sam, I was covering games for this radio station in 1999 and 2000. And, you know, in the United Center, sitting in the press box with basically press, and that was about it. And they would announce 14,000 people there. If there were 6,000 people there, it would have been a story. Those are the days of the Kyle Calder, Mark Bell, Jocelyn Thibault.
I had to pull the roster up. Eric Daze was on the squad.
Was on
24-year-old Daze.
Tuomo Ruutu was one of those guys that was skating around back
33-year-old
then.
33-year-old Eddie Olczyk.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was some lean years, but now
Proby was 34 that year.
Yeah. It got ugly. It got really ugly. But, you know, it's better now, obviously. And, you know, of the Blackhawks return to action tomorrow night against Chris Versteeg and Joakim Nordstrom and the Carolina Hurricanes. Versteeg had a goal the other night where he went between his legs.
I saw that, and he said after the game, didn't he say something about Coach Q?
He said he did that once in Chicago, and Coach Q read him the riot act, as if to say, great shot. Don't ever do that again.
Nice, Hayes. Nice catch, Hayes. Don't ever do it again from Major League.
Exactly. So, I mean,
don't ever do it again. It went in. Oh, Q doesn't like the fancy stuff at all.
No.
There are a couple guys that can get away with it. 88, 81.
Yeah.
That's about it.
32 could not.
No.
Or 23, whatever number he came back as.
He flipped and flopped.
Yeah, he couldn't do that. But it was an amazing goal, and the announcer went crazy, and then they showed it after the game. It came off the end boards, and I think he probably could have put it in regardless of not going through the legs. And how he got a little elevation on the puck, I have no idea. But that's story for another day. But Hawks are back in action. I'm kind of curious to get some thoughts about where you think the Blackhawks are at this particular point. Now, the Central Division is the toughest division by far to me in the entire NHL. You had what we called a measuring stick type of game against Dallas that didn't go very well. And, okay, it tends to happen. You're on the road. There are things that enter into it. You weren't completely healthy. You can make all the excuses in the world. Dallas just outplayed them. That was just the way that it went down. I started to feel a little bit better about things, though, toward the end of December and where I thought they were. Now, Corey Crawford's been carrying this team to me. Corey Crawford and Patrick Kane have basically been the two guys that have gotten the Blackhawks to where they are right now.
Yeah, and I don't worry so much about what the Blackhawks do before the calendar flips. I'm beyond that because
I agree with you.
From what I've seen, and I've been around for about, 3 Western Conference finals now covering the team. I've seen 2 cups now. And I remember when I used to produce here, 2012 and 13, and we get phone calls in November, trade Patrick Kane,
mm-hmm.
fire Joel Quenneville, Corey Crawford needs to go, cut him.
Yeah.
You know, so the overreaction in hockey, especially for this team, I don't want to say they play through the motions, but in hockey, there's ebb and flow. And it's tough to be consistent for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I'd rather have it be inconsistent now as opposed to the postseason, where they're always locked in. They always seem to find that second gear. And it's one of the most cliched statements in sports, but it is true. When it gets to April and May and June, you don't want to play them.
No. And the thing that's a little more troublesome about the way things have started is the new NHL playoff format, which, of course, stresses your division and division play and seeds you at that particular point.
And they take the top three from each division,
right,
and then two wildcard teams.
So it's imperative that you play well against not only your division but also within your conference. And those are the kind of things where you think about, okay, you left a point on the table. You let Calgary come back. You let the Oilers come. I'm just using it as examples here. That you look to maybe in April and May thinking, gosh, if only we could have. Because there's such an emphasis now on divisional play, which I think is good. I mean, because those are the teams you're playing more often than not. You know, you're only seeing the Eastern Conference teams twice a year, which I still think is kind of a bad thing, especially when the Blackhawks are the only original six team in the West now. But, you know, I'm not as concerned. And I kind of agree with you, Sam, that if this were, you know, February or March, I'd probably be a little bit more concerned that Jonathan Toews isn't contributing as much offensively. I would probably be a little more concerned, you know, that the D is not as strong as it has been. You know, that Seabrook is, you know, played good, but not Seabrook-like. And you're right. It's a long, long year, and these guys are leaving it out on the ice all the time. It's difficult to take a time off, so to speak, like we talk about with the Bulls. You know, certain guys go out there and kind of go through the motions. You get hurt if you're doing that in hockey. But I'm not as concerned. And I thought they were playing a lot better until I saw what they were up against Dallas. Now, again, this is one game in the first meeting. So I don't know how much stock to put into that.
Yeah, and Dallas had a lot to play for. It was their building, you know, lots of energy there. Champs are in town.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick Sharp had a lot to play for. He scored a goal in that game. A lot of the younger kids on Dallas, they're tired of being the younger brother on the block. And you did bring up the record against the Central Division. The Blackhawks are 4-6-1 against the Central.
Yeah.
That's really the only stumbling block so far. Against the West, they've played 20 games or 24 games and won 14. So
yeah.
Against the West as a whole, against the East, they're fine. Division opponents sort of have the blueprint, but then again, Minnesota had their blueprint in the playoffs, you know, coming into the playoffs. Well, Minnesota had beaten them all these times, and then
it didn't matter.
It didn't matter because they figure out ways to win. You don't want to play the Blackhawks in a series because they get stronger in 4, 5, 6, and 7. You better get them down 3-0.
Yeah, even then.
Like the Canucks did, remember in 2011?
Yeah, well, how about the...
Well, of course, in Detroit.
Yeah.
But in 2011... the Blackhawks were down 3-0 against Vancouver, and this is the year after they won their first cup.
And they had a clean house.
Got rid of 9 guys or something like that, and Corey Crawford was outstanding against Vancouver. They lost in Game 7. So you better nip them early, or they're going to
get
stronger.
Them.
Because they get stronger, they find out ways to beat you. Joel Quenneville will outsmart you. But this year that Patrick Kane is having has been unbelievable.
It kind of tells you a little bit of something about him as a player, and obviously you never wish what he went through on anybody, you know, and you don't, again, we don't know everything that happened, but obviously, you know, the case went away. He was even strong while it was still kind of in the balance, and to kind of shut that out kind of shows the special type of a hockey player that this young man is. The thing that's impressed me the most about him this year is not the goals. It's the two-way hockey he's playing.
Yeah. And he's starting to double shift even more now, late in the third period. You know, he's out there two shifts in a row. He's scary dangerous with the puck. We've known that for years. He's got 50 points in 36 games, by the way.
Yeah, and I think wasn't it pointed out that during the streak, even just the totals during the streak would have still allowed him to lead the league in scoring.
First in assists, second in goals. He's one behind Jamie Benn and Vladimir Tarasenko. But somebody asked me the other day, we're sitting at the bar, and he said, well, what makes Patrick Kane so good? And it was an honest question, not a hockey fan, not somebody that really acts like they know the game. And I just said, when he has the puck, there's at least three pairs of eyes on him.
Yeah.
There's his man, there's the help defender, and there's the goalie.
Yeah.
Whenever 88 has the puck, you've got attention from several areas. And he's able to slip and slide through you. He draws all this traffic. And then if he doesn't top shelf a goal, he's throwing a no-look pass to somebody who's wide open at the net and just taps it in. So the accountability that you have to have defensively for him, I don't think there's anybody that's more dangerous with the puck or on offense in the entire league.
No, and the stick handling ability, the skating ability, the hockey awareness, if you will.
That's a good word, awareness.
Yeah, of just exactly where everybody is on the ice, where he is in relation to where they are. The play could break down.
His top line mate, Andy, doesn't even speak the language.
I know. The bread man does not speak
English.
They've
never played together coming into this season, and they're already on this plane.
Okay, I want to make a point about Artem Anisimov, but we got to take a quick time out. We're going to talk more Blackhawks hockey coming up toward the bottom of the hour. If you want to chime in and kind of let us know where you think they are at this particular point, we would certainly welcome that. You can call or text. Same number, 312-981-7200 is the phone number to call. This week, Chicago's Best is taking your game day experience to the next level with the Best in Football Fair. Chicago's Best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Andy and Sam back with you here on The Beat, 720 WGN, with you till 7 o'clock, talking a little Blackhawks hockey right now. As the Hawks get back into action tomorrow against the Carolina Hurricanes, Christopher Stieg and Joakim Nordstrom will be back in town in the place that they won the Stanley Cup.
We also have details on the Blackhawks trip to Minneapolis, which is that hockey-filled three-day weekend, February 20th through the 22nd. You'll travel by chartered coach to the Twin Cities to see the outdoor alumni game, which Troy Murdy is playing
in. Yes, he is.
At TCF Bank Stadium on the University of Minnesota campus. And on Sunday, it's the Blackhawks and the Wild at the 2016 Coors Light NHL Stadium Series outdoor game. Your tour includes accommodations at the Hampton Inn, Minneapolis downtown, two breakfasts, and game tickets. Call Sunrise Tours at 800-881-8804 to book your tour or to find pricing and booking information, WGNradio.com/events.
I was just in Minneapolis over the weekend. I keep thinking today's like Sunday. It's Saturday. Anyway, I was there earlier in the week.
College basketball.
Yeah, earlier in the week for college basketball. And that brand new football stadium is almost done. It's huge.
Do they still play at the barn? The basketball team?
Yeah.
Like the old-fashioned barn?
Williams Arena. I was broadcasting from what would be considered the hayloft of the barn. It's old, but it's got a lot of charm. It's got a raised floor. And I tell you what, you know, for broadcasting a game, it was pretty cool to be up above a little bit because you had a much better perspective than you would had you been down near the floor.
Yeah, you're not floor seats
raised.
There.
Yeah.
No way.
But it was interesting. It got the heart rate moving a little bit. There's no elevators.
Ramps.
Oh, yeah, ramps and stairs and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the new football stadium looks pretty impressive. It's big. It's really, really big. It's kind of in the middle of it's right where the Metrodome used to be, but a little bit away from downtown, but you can definitely notice it.
I know they're excited, too, and they think they have a team that could compete as well. But Hawks and Wild, you wanted to talk about Anisimov, the guy who's sort of been centering that Kane, Panarin magic.
Now, the thing that I wanted to bring up, you know, Patrick Kane's a special player no matter what. He's going to get his points no matter what. But I do remember, you know, back in 12 and in 13 and even in 14, when everyone was wondering, boy, are we going to ever get a center for that second line so that actually Patrick Kane can be Patrick Kane?
They need a second line center. I'm telling you, that's what they need.
I mean, it got close last year with Brad Richards, you know, and the relationship that they had, you know, was more, you know, brother than anything else. And it was kind of unique. It wasn't Michael Hanzus, who was a little slow, you know, to be honest. And I think Anisimov is big enough where he's a physical presence, but he's not plotting. He can skate. The guy can skate, and he's fast. And I think that combination between Panarin, Anisimov, and Kane, poor John Weideman, Artemi, Artem, I mean, I feel bad for him every time that line's
Patrick,
on the ice.
Yeah. Patrick's a tough one.
Exactly. I feel bad for him every time that line is on the ice. But, you know, I think that they finally have found a guy that can complement the game that Kane plays, because he's like a good point guard, Patrick Kane. If the center runs the floor, the center's going to get rewarded by Patrick Kane.
The old Shaq rule. You know, Shaq run the floor, he's going to get at least 10 or 12 points.
Absolutely. And I think that the same way around is that Anisimov's got enough awareness to know where Patrick Kane is on the ice as well now with the relationship that, as you mentioned, two of the three guys speak English, one of them doesn't. It's just amazing to me how that has all gelled together and as quickly as that has gelled together.
Yeah, it's amazing to me, and I've asked Kane about this multiple times. You know, you've got two guys who are predominantly Russian-speaking hockey players, and somehow you still figure out where they're going to be. And maybe it's not as hard as I'm trying to make it seem, but it doesn't mean it's any less remarkable.
No, it's...
And the point about Anisimov, I think you're right, the big body is something that Kane's never had as a second-line center. I think Dave Bolin gets a bad rap for how well he played with Kane for a couple of years. I mean, Bolin's got two cups.
Yeah.
And 2010 and 13, they got rid of him, but this has been your in-the-corners center,
mm-hmm.
your guy that wins faceoffs.
Wins battles. Mm-hmm.
That's a Joel Quenneville second-line center, and he's probably the most ideal guy for Patrick Kane. So I'm with you there, but I, you know, a lot of people act like he's never had one, and Bolin was very, very serviceable.
You know what? Yeah, and I think the debate really kind of happened a little bit more after 13, I think, than any time else. I mean,
because Bolin was gone.
Yeah, because he was gone. Yeah, I mean, they brought in Hanzus, and I think people were like, okay, you know, he's got experience. Will he be able to keep
couldn't
up?
Skate.
Yeah, will he be able to keep up with these guys? And the answer was no. I mean, it was hard to watch at times, but Kane is so good that he can cover up a lot of those mistakes and deficiencies that other players on the ice have. Now, the other thing real quick I want to bring up about the Hawks is Tara Vinen getting a little more, I guess, in favor with Coach Q? I mean,
it comes and goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of hard to figure out, because I know the other night when Hossa was out, you know, Shaw got a lot of time on that first line, which I thought was great. I think Shaw's had one of his best years ever.
Agreed.
I think he's shown a lot to me this year. But Tara Vinen, even on the penalty kill, a couple of times we saw that. I mean,
it helps when Kruger's out.
Yeah.
It doesn't help. It helps Tara Vinen.
He's getting a little more action
seasoning. See, he's still 21 years old. That's where you have to.
It's hard to temper that, you know?
Pull the reins back a little bit because, well, Kane and Taves did it, and Keith did it, and Seabrook did it, and came up at, you know, low 20s, some even earlier ages, and were pretty good. Tara Vinen is still sort of adjusting. And he's been here a handful of years now. He's been here 2-3 years.
Yeah.
So you expect, because of what you've seen of prior prospects, he still looks like he's 16.
I agree.
He's all of 5'11". He's 165 pounds.
Soaking wet. And even in the equipment, maybe 166.
And he still shows you those shades of a special player.
Yeah. All right. So we'll continue talking a little Blackhawks for you as well. We're going to switch over to baseball coming up after the bottom of the hour.
We have to talk about how Adam Warren found out he was being traded to the Cubs.
That's good.
If you haven't heard that yet.
And then we'll talk a little bit closer to 5 o'clock. Todd Furman is going to join us, talk a little bit about how the Cubs right now are the heavy favorites, it seems, to win
5-1, 6-1
World Series. And we'll kind of delve into that and to see if it's some smoke and mirrors or if it's legit after the offseason that the Cubs have had. The world-famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section of WGNradio.com. This year, Chicago is captured in black and white, presented in a special and one-of-a-kind way, the 2016 Tukiez calendar. This is the eighth year for these highly sought-after calendars, and it's the first year it's all black and white. Not only does it feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lenses of our spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted with your name seamlessly blended in. So maybe Sam's name is at U.S. Cellular Field. You never know.
Mm.
You'll enjoy a view of Chicago that will change the way you look at this city forever. These black and white calendars add a whole new level of class and elegance. Give a gift that is completely 100% original. Go to WGNradio.com, scroll down to the features section, make a purchase of our calendar, and a portion of the proceeds benefit JDRF. To make 2016 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar. The Tukiez calendar, available in the featured section at WGNradio.com. We'll get to the news in just a moment. 720 WGN. Welcome back in on the beat. Andy Mazur and Sam Panayotovich holding down the fort here on a kind of a blustery type of damp, wet Saturday afternoon here in the city of Chicago. Hope you had a great Christmas. Hope you had a great holiday season. If you don't celebrate Christmas, happy holidays, and we're wishing you a happy new year coming up in a couple of days as we get into 2016. We're going to switch gears a little bit here. We talked a little hockey, a little basketball earlier in the show. We may get back to some of those, but the Baseball Hall of Fame is something, it's kind of a hot-button issue pretty much every year. I know that we here at WGN were upset that Ron Santo didn't get in before he passed away, and that there were a lot of folks thought that the numbers alone should have gotten him in even when he played and when he was first eligible. But thankfully, he's there. He's in. And, you know, there's a lot of these cases that have kind of been complicated to me just by all the issues that have gone on in baseball and in the game, you know, with PEDs, and, you know, now you got Pete Rose and things of that nature. So they're going to be the ballots are already in. Everybody that is eligible to vote has already done so. The ballots had to be postmarked before Christmas, and the announcement comes out in the second week of January. And, you know, I think you can make a case for several of the new guys, especially the first-year ballot guys like Ken Griffey.
Yeah, he's the only first guy for me.
Yeah.
That's the only first-year guy I think is a lock to get in. I mean, if Griffey doesn't get 75%, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Something's seriously wrong if you don't give Ken Griffey Jr. first ballot entry. That would just be – that'd be sad.
You know, it's true. I mean, the guy put up tremendous numbers. He did so in a park that was very difficult to play in as far as a home run hitter was concerned in the Kingdome. And then later on, toward the end of his career at Safeco, you think about some of the things he did with the Cincinnati Reds. You know, obviously he bounced around a little bit toward the very end of his career. But Griffey seems to me like one of those no-brainers. But then, you know, you get other guys on this ballot. And one that, I will say, I mean, I know this man personally, and I've developed a friendship and a relationship with him from being on San Diego. But to me, a guy like Trevor Hoffman, I think, deserves a little bit of extra thought and evaluation. He was the first man to get the 600 saves. Mariano Rivera since got there and passed him, and I'm sure a lot of people's thoughts and a lot of people's minds will be a first ballot Hall of Famer when he's eligible. But I think a guy like Hoffman should be there.
He's probably second of the guys that are eligible for the first year. You have Ken Griffey, then Trevor Hoffman. Mm-hmm. Then Billy Wagner,
yeah.
Probably. You got a couple other names, Jim Edmonds, Jason Kendall, Troy Glaufs. We get to Garrett Anderson, and we're already starting to slip off.
Yeah, Mark Redzolanik, Mike Sweeney. Jason Kendall, Mike Lowell, Randy Wynn.
David Eckstein.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a fine line between the Baseball Hall of Fame and the Hall of Pretty Good, you know? I mean, not to take anything away from some of those other guys, you know, Billy Wagner had a very good career. But is it Hall of Fame worthy?
No.
I don't think so either. And you know, baseball's Hall of Fame is the most, it's the stingiest of all the Hall of Fames to get into. It's something like 3% or 4% of the players, I think, of what I read, are enshrined that have ever played the game. It's tough. It is tough to get in. And because of what PEDs did and the whole steroid era, you know, the usual benchmarks were 500 home runs, 3,000 hits, if you're a position player. 3,000 strikeouts, 300 wins, got you into the Hall of Fame. I think people are looking at these votes a lot differently today, and even still, as far removed as we are from that era of baseball, which Barry Bonds, of course, and Sammy Sosa are all a part of, Roger Clemens, guys that certainly have put up the numbers, but you wonder, again, you can't help but think how many of those numbers were enhanced or legit.
Of the four guys on the ballot returning from last year,
mm-hmm.
there are four guys that have more than 500 home runs. Three of them are around the 10% mark.
Yeah.
Gary Sheffield at 11%. Mark McGwire had 10% last year. Sammy Sosa, 6.6.
Yeah.
And of course, 5% is what you need to stay on.
Right.
Just to stay alive.
And you need 75% to get in. So, for example, last year, Mike Piazza was the closest to not get in at 69.9%, and he was in his fourth year. So, you know, those are the kind of things. Now, to me, the guys that are returning, you got Mike Piazza, Jeff Bagwell, Tim Raines, Curt Schilling, Roger Clemens, and Barry Bonds. That's the first column guys, Lee Smith, Edgar Martinez, Alan Trammell, Mike Mussina, Jeff Kent, Fred McGriff, Larry Walker, Sheffield, McGuire, Sosa, and Garcia Parra. Those are the guys that are back from last year that qualified with a 5% and above. You know, Piazza to me seems like a no-brainer too. He redefined kind of what it is to be an offensive-minded catcher in big league baseball. You know, with over 400 home runs and playing on a bunch of, you know, pretty good teams. But the one to me that belongs in there that's not in there was almost as big of a glaring omission to me before Andre Dawson got in as Andre Dawson is Tim Raines.
Rock Raines.
This guy, his numbers are off the charts.
Number 800 stolen bases, 1,500 runs.
Yeah, and he's having a hard time, you know, a hard time drumming up support and getting in. And a lot of this obviously becomes a little personal with relationships that the Baseball Writers Association of America, they're the people that vote. I believe that the voting is changing even next year to invite the .com reporters that have been around for a while to be able to vote for the Hall of Fame as well, which could freshen things up a little bit because there's always that argument that some of the members of the BBWA haven't covered games in 10 or 15 years and aren't really familiar with the intricacies and the ins and outs of what today's game is.
This might not make a lot of people happy, and that's fine. That's why we're here. I look at this list, and the best player I've ever seen play in my lifetime is Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
That's the best player I've ever – we're talking double-digit gold gloves, several MVPs. He was intentionally walked
– thousands of times.
I mean, it's unbelievable. He changed the game more than anybody after the year of 1985. I mean, mm-hmm. Who changed it more? And he's probably never going to make it in. He's got the most home runs ever. You've got Roger Clemens, most strikeouts ever. Probably not going to make it. And then the guy with the most hits of all time was just kicked out for good.
Yeah, and that's the one. See, now you talk about Barry Bonds when you're growing up. I grew up, you know, in the 70s watching Pete Rose basically throw his body all over the field. Maybe not the best talent always, but, you know, play second base, play left field, play the outfield, play first base, 4,000 some odd hits to his credit. And it kind of hurts me a little bit to know that the guy that I saw play as well as he did has no chance. I mean, zero chance to get in. It's not an exact science. It's a lot of there's a lot of subjectivity in this whole thing. It's a lot of guys, and unfortunately, some of these writers want to become part of the story as well. I remember there was a local writer here a few years ago that was the only guy that didn't vote a unanimous candidate
yep,
in,
and took, I know him.
And took a lot of pride in it for some reason, which I think is ridiculous. But you know, that's neither here nor there. But it does get very, very subjective. And how tolerant are you going to be, I'm talking to the writers, of the guys that were in the quote-unquote steroid era?
It doesn't help that those three guys aren't very likable either.
Very true.
They're all pompous.
Very, very true.
Very, very cocky and arrogant.
They didn't do themselves any favors.
And that doesn't, no, right. Yeah. And that's their fault, and they've got to live with that. But I'm telling you what, if you have a Hall of Fame, and it's never been a character Hall of Fame.
No, because
you've got racists and murderers
well,
in there. I mean, you got a lot of bad people in that Hall of Fame that mm-hmm. did things worse than putting a needle in their arm.
Absolutely.
I understand steroids are illegal, but you're telling me 30 years from now, we're at the Hall of Fame, and there's no mention of Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Pete Rose? There's something wrong there. Like, I'm not saying put them in, but you can't ignore what they've done. I don't exactly know that there is a solution, and there's a lot of old guys that have been behind the old law for a long time. They don't want to put them in. I understand that, but it's silly to me that my son or grandson or whoever doesn't know who Pete Rose or Barry Bonds is.
Yeah. You know, and I agree. And there's been a lot of thought into saying, okay, everybody's eligible. Forget about what that whole era was like, because as you pointed out, and I think you hit it on the head, if you went in there with a moral detector and you took down all the plaques of guys that did other things that were wrong, there would be very few plaques that were left sitting up on the walls.
Ty Cobb was one of the worst people ever.
And people will tell you that, you know, that played against him, that, you know, if they're still around, that covered him, that people, you know.
He spit on people.
And came in spikes high, you know, and was trying to injure people. But, again, at the time, this was the guy that set the bar as far as the how to play the game hard and how to play the game tough and 4,000 hits and all these stolen bases. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, okay, put these guys in, but on their plaque, make a note of played during steroid era.
Fine.
I'm good with that.
I have no problem with that. How about this? I joked about this once, and I actually think it's not a bad idea. Make a cheater's wing. I mean, come on. And on our left, we've got the Cheaters Wing.
Kind of like your bowl game. You know, how do you get into the real hall?
Who knows?
Yeah, clear your name.
We worry about that later.
Yeah, exactly.
But the asterisk is a realistic option. I mean, there's an asterisk next to the home run record.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I was trying to think to myself, too, because you can vote for 10 guys. If I had a vote and I was able to put a ballot together for this year's class, I would have Ken Griffey Jr., no doubt. Me, personally, I would have Trevor Hoffman on there. I would probably have Mike Piazza. I would likely have Tim Raines. And then I get into this gray area because I don't think, you know, Larry Walker was a fine player. I don't think he's there. Edgar Martinez should be thanking Frank Thomas for getting in because this kind of opens the door for the whole DH situation. And are you really a, you know, player? And people forget that Martinez played third base at a pretty high level for quite some time as well. I would have to start thinking about Edgar Martinez. I would start to think a little bit more about the Clemens and the Bonds situation in there as well. I still have a problem with I don't know why I still have this kind of axe to grind, I think, with Sosa and McGuire, just because I think maybe the way that all went down and, you know, maybe getting to cover Sammy a little bit maybe tainted me a little bit on that one.
I did, by the way. I messed up. I said that Roger Clemens had the most strikeouts. He's third. It's Nolan Ryan first and Randy Johnson second. But Clemens, of the guys on the ballot.
Yeah, the most strikeouts on the ballot.
Most on the ballot. Yeah,
that's what I thought you meant anyway.
But yeah, so I mean, I can tell you're ramped up about it. I mean, and there's it's such a great debate because there is no concrete answer.
No, and then you get some of these writers, too, that are so hell-bent on putting somebody in for the first on the first ballot. Nobody deserves to go. Right, whatever.
Well, that's what you said earlier. People are trying to make themselves part of the story.
And I don't get it.
Unfortunately, that'll be the case because they have the voice. The players don't have a voice anymore once they retire.
That's very true. So that's the thought there about the Hall of Fame. We may get into that a little bit later as well. Coming up after a quick timeout.
Vegas!
We're going to go to Vegas, baby. Find out why the Cubs are the odds-on favorite, the heavy favorite right now, to win the World Series. Smoke and mirrors or fact? We get into that next. The Beat continues on 720 WGN.
To the 40, 40, 35, 30, 30, 20. He's to the 20. He's going to score. Touchdown.
I'm Dave Enick, inviting you to enjoy Chicago's Big Ten team as they take on the Tennessee Volunteers.
Wildcat football from the Outback Bowl. New Year's Day. Dave's got the kickoff at 11.
I'm Coach Pat Fitzgerald. Northwestern Wildcat football plays here. 720 WGN.
Mattress Firm's overstock and clearance sale is on now. $30 million of overstock and clearance mattresses have got to go. The best brands, Tempur-Pedic, Sealy, Beautyrest, Serta, Stearns & Foster, and more. Come in today, get a luxury pillow, mattress protector, or mattress frame for just 88 cents each when you get select Tempur-Pedic, Beautyrest, Black Hybrid, or Sealy Posturepedic Optimum mattress sets. Buy now. Save on select Tempur-Pedic mattresses before prices go up on January the 5th. Plus, sleep happy, pay no interest for 5 full years. The overstock and clearance sale on now at Mattress Firm, America's number one mattress retailer. So, Chicagoland, meet Mattress Firm, America's number one mattress retailer. It doesn't get any better than this. Go to mattressfirm.com, find the store nearest you, and you'll be sleeping happy tonight. 888-534-6894 for details about credit costs and terms. Again, Mattress Firm knows mattresses. They know how to save you money. Shop Mattress Firm today.
There's a big sale at Half Price Books. Big sale at Half Price Books.
Hurry to Half Price Books' biggest sale of the season, the 20% off everything sale. Books, music, movies, even collectibles and bestsellers. Going on now at Half Price Books.
Hey, I have rhythm. I love to dance. And I've been told that I dance pretty well. But I'm also totally blind, which means that sometimes my circadian rhythms can get totally out of step with the world around me. Circadian rhythms are regulated by our internal master body clock. But because I can't perceive light, my body clock simply doesn't know what time it is. This can have me wide awake in the middle of the night and fighting to stay awake during the day. That can affect relationships and make it difficult to be productive at work. And it can make every day a real challenge. It's not my imagination. It's called non-24, and it affects up to 70% of people who are totally blind. So if you're like me, you're not alone, and there is hope. Call 855-856-2424 today, or visit learnmorenon24.com to find out more about non-24. because learning more about Non-24 is the first step to getting your rhythm back.
Sponsored by Vanda Pharmaceuticals.
Out with the old, in with the new. A happy New Year's chant or angry voters in 2016? I'm Rick Pearson. On the Sunday Spin, we'll take a look back at the year in politics and what lies ahead in the new year, including the voting for president and state lawmaker.
The Sunday Spin, tomorrow morning, 7 to 9.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Today, how to incorporate your business in just 10 minutes so you won't lose everything if you get sued. Step 1, stop putting it off. If you're not incorporated and someone sues your business tomorrow, it's not just your business at risk. You can lose everything, your home, your car, even your life savings. Step 2, call the following number for a free 10-minute incorporation guide from Incorporate.com. 1-800-973-9962. They don't provide legal or financial advice. They just make incorporating quick and easy. So you can incorporate or form an LLC in just 10 minutes. That number again is 1-800-973-9962. Step 3, congratulate yourself. By taking just 10 minutes to incorporate your business or form an LLC, you protected your home, your car, and your life savings. And that is how you incorporate your business in just 10 minutes. But hurry while they're still giving away these 10-minute incorporation guides for free. Call 1-800-973-9962. That's 1-800-973-9962.
Back on the beat, Andy Mazur, Sam Panionovich with you on the Saturday evening here in Chicago. With you till 7 o'clock tonight. Want to welcome in right now former oddsmaker at Caesars Palace. Doing some work now for Sportsline.com under the CBS umbrella. And also a website, toddstake.com. We welcome Todd Furman into the program. And hey, Todd, thanks for taking some time and happy holidays.
Thanks, guys. Same to you.
We want to talk about the Cubs. And we want to talk about them being the favorite to win the World Series. Again, just because they're the favorite doesn't mean that they're actually the best, right? I mean, this is basically based on money, right?
It's definitely going to play a big role in terms of public perception and where odds makers think that the casual bettor along with the professional are going to plunk down their cash. But for the first time in a long time, you can make the case that the Cubs should be the front runner in the National League with their offseason acquisitions. We saw them get seasoning last year, and I think optimism on the North side is actually well-founded. I know I was a major detractor last year, didn't think they were going to get there so quickly.
And you're a Cub fan too, so that might go into what you make your number. But I mean, the win total doesn't really line up with what a lot of the other favorites have, right? I mean, like, the Cubs aren't the best team according to Vegas, are they?
No. The win total this year for the Cubs, you're going to be talking about a team in the high 80s, low 90s, that's much more consistent with them being considered a front runner, not only in the National League, but also to win the World Series. But you're exactly right, Sam. In the past, we've seen Cubs win totals in the mid-70s, yet the team consistently sits at 15-1 because every odds maker out here in the desert knows that folks come out here, they plunk down their 50, 100 bucks, whatever it may be, and there's no sense offering a good, true indication of where the Cubs' potential is, with the realization that you're going to get money on them no matter what number you're hanging.
And obviously, you know, the excitement, as you pointed out, kind of almost rightfully so, is all founded because of the moves that they have decided to make over there with Jason Hayward and John Lackey and with Ben Zobrist. And they're probably banking on people that are taking vacations out there from here, plunking down some money on them.
Well, I was going to say, if hopefully people aren't electing to come out here now over the Christmas holiday, because it's actually been warmer for you guys in the Midwest than what it's been out here in the desert. So I'm a little confused by that, but thankfully after watching the Sun Bowl, none of us have had the same snowfall they're seeing in West Texas. But you're exactly right, and I think a lot of Cub fans were a little bit discouraged that they didn't go out there and get one of those high-ticket arms that was available, whether it was a David Price or a Zach Greinke. But you have to give the Cubs credit. They invested in a player who's going to be a fixture in that outfield for years to come. Defensively, he really fortifies a unit that created some problems. And you can go out there and find the John Lackeys of the world, wait, get some younger pitchers. I've never been of the mindset a guy approaching 30 is worth $250-plus million like those big arms attracted.
Todd Furman with us, 720 WGN. He also does the Bet the Board NFL podcast twice a week. It's going to get cut down with the playoffs. But let's talk NFL, and why not? Who's your favorite? Who do you think is going to represent each conference in the big game? And then how about a sleeper maybe that maybe some people aren't thinking about that can possibly win it all?
Well, I think it's not really going out on a limb, but you look at the Patriots right now. This is a team you could have had it 5-1 was actually where the market kind of peaked over the last 4 or 5 weeks when they were mired in that modest two-game losing streak. But I think New England getting healthy at the right time, they're going to have their hands full tomorrow when they take on the Jets. You've actually seen professional money coming in on gangrene in that spot. The Pittsburgh Steelers, another team that's taken a good amount of money. Their market peaked around 25 or 30-1. They're actually listed as second favorites in the AFC, given that resurgent offense and their ability to put 30 points up in kind of the blink of an eye. When you look at the NFC, no surprise here. The Cardinals and Carolina Panthers atop the board there. Seattle's actually been one of the bigger movers. You could have had the Seahawks anywhere from 18-1 as high as 28-1 before. And I think for me, given their experience level and the complete team they bring, albeit some questions at running back, Seattle would be my pick to come out of the NFC, and I still think it's New England's to lose in the AFC. You mentioned sleeper, Sam. I don't really think there's a good ticket to be had. I know a lot of people talking about Kansas City and the momentum, but this is still a team with a pop gun offense, and I don't think Alex Smith can run the gauntlet if they have to win 3 games in as many weeks to represent the AFC.
All right, let's switch gears quickly here to the NCAA. The championships coming up shortly here, down to the Final Four. What do you see from that, and what are the odds looking like as far as the Final Four is concerned?
Well, the interesting betting trend has been the public can't get enough of that Michigan State love. They see the Spartans catching 9.5, and they think not only is it a great play to grab them with the points, but also to dabble a little bit on the money line. And it's really hard to argue with what we've seen from Coach D'Antonio in the past. 12-1-1 against the spread when his Michigan State Spartans are underdogs of 10 points or less. So they definitely have that working for him. But you look at the way the team moves the football. L.J. Shelton, the team's leading rusher, averages less than 5 yards a carry. Not going to work all that well with Alabama. I think the game might be a little bit higher scoring than people think, but it's definitely a lay it or don't play it type scenario with Alabama. The other semifinal, guys, between Clemson and Oklahoma, public action pretty well split on this one, but you're seeing a thought process that Oklahoma may be the best team going right now. I'm of a different mindset. I think Clemson will have a chance to heal up in a defense that was outstanding early in the year, got nicked up late in the season. Deshaun Watson plays with a bit of a chip on his shoulder. And I'd make a case for Clemson being a live dog there, although I like the game under the total at 64.5 more than I like a side.
I give you a lot of credit this time of year, Todd. You've got basketball finally kicking in the public. You've got the baseball futures, NFL, college football. But I give you a lot of respect, man, for trying to cap 40 college football bowl games. I mean, how much is too much?
You know what? I think it's a good reward for the players involved. Now, of course, I wasn't a Division I athlete, didn't get swag bags like a lot of these kids get to go out there and play for the holidays. But you watch and you look at the attendance for some of these second-tier bowl games. Clearly, it's a made-for-TV product. No greater example than Colorado State taking on Nevada in the inaugural Arizona Bowl. I mean, what gets you more excited about postseason college football than seeing two Mountain West teams get to go head-to-head for the second time in a season in a game that they couldn't even find national TV time, only available on actually apps if you want to watch the game live?
I just it just blows my mind how many bowl games there are now. How many bad, and like, they didn't have enough 6-win teams, Todd. I mean, they had to ask the 5-7s just to come join the party.
And we'll see a 5-7 team in action from the Big Ten later tonight that I think offers a little bit of value.
No, here we go.
You talk about motivation. And I know, Sam, you've been a Nebraska hater from the start, but this is still a team that their largest loss this year, of course it was against Purdue, was by 10 points. I'm not sure UCLA wants to be there, and they see a reward for a season in the Pac-12 South knocking off a Nebraska team just lucky to be given a stay of execution this season.
Before we let you go, what about Northwestern? Does Northwestern have a shot to keep it close against Tennessee?
It's one of the more interesting bowl games for sure. It's not one that I'll be invested in myself. You've seen some over money from 45.5 out to 47.5. Tennessee definitely more athletic, but the one thing Northwestern has done is they've found ways to make games ugly. And when you talk about a contest where points could be at a premium, the dog makes an awful lot of sense, especially over a touchdown.
Well, Todd, thanks for the time. Appreciate the knowledge as well. And we'll keep tabs on the other sportsline.com and also toddstake.com.
Always a pleasure, guys. Have a happy and healthy new year.
Right back at you. Todd Furman joining us from the desert, and where it's warmer here than it is in Las Vegas.
Too many bowl games.
Yeah, still too many bowl games.
Halfway home on a holiday Saturday, 720 WGN. It's The Beat. Andy Mazur and Sam Panionovich, 312-981-7200. And Andy, you were talking about this before the show, and then you teased it in the show, the buy or return contest you want to do. And if you're just joining us, we want you to list either your best buy or your best return in sports, and we'll pick the best one, and we'll send you the biggest pizza that Lou Malnati's can put together.
Yeah, it'd be a nice nice treat for you. And as Sam pointed out, if you still have stragglers left at your house from the holidays.
And I know you do.
Trying to figure out what to feed them. Strap on the feed bag. And
when's Uncle Larry going home? He's still snoring.
Exactly. Tell him to stop snoring and eat some Lou Malnati's pizza, which is what the top prize is here. So basically my thought on this was all the hype about buying gifts for the holidays and today being a big return type of a day, for those that didn't get exactly what they wanted. I thought maybe we could kind of skew this sports-wise. And for me, for example, I picked the Hawks. I would buy them a little more cap relief so they could make some moves, and I would probably return the 4-year deal that was deserved at the time, but maybe not now, for Brian Bickle.
I would return the Derrick Rose contract.
Okay, that'd be a good return.
That would probably be...
Restore credit, or would you like to see something else?
Yeah, just give me a gift card. Okay. Just put it all on there, all $100 million of it. Actually, it was 5 years and $94 million. And that contract kicked in. It was unfortunate timing.
Yeah, it was terrible timing.
And, I feel bad for Derek because I've known him since I think we were 17. We're the same age. He used to play at the Y in Blue Island. I played a couple times against him. Played against him in grade school. So he's somebody that I've always sort of looked at as a peer. And now the injuries have sort of jaded him personally. And he's getting a lot of criticism from a lot of people. And some of it's deserved, some of it isn't. But there is no worse contract in the game of basketball than the one that he signed.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I mean, before that was the Carlos Boozer deal, maybe.
I mean, at least Boozer was on the floor.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. That was a good point. And it was not as long. So,
I mean, Derrick Rose is making $20 million this year.
It's a lot of cash.
And there's another year on that deal. Yep. He's got 21.3. Just put it in his pocket.
Yeah.
It's a bad contract.
It's a bad contract indeed. And again, like you said, you couldn't have foreseen what the future would have been like. Obviously, this is a guy that was an MVP, and still, who knows, could bounce back. He doesn't seem to have the same jets and the same everything else that he had before. Hard to expect that after a couple of knee injuries too.
So you bought and returned. I just returned
because
I like my other gifts. Let's see what Mike has to add to the conversation here. 312-981-7200. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. Happy holidays.
You too.
Right back at you.
I'm thinking a little more current for my stocks, and I would buy and return somebody's contract. I'm thinking I'm buying Alex Gordon for the outfield. And I'm thinking I'm going to return Adam LaRoche and his contract.
Yeah, kind of hard to argue with that. I mean, Alex Gordon would be a nice addition to several ball clubs, including the White Sox now, who are probably going to turn their attention to that outfield. And I thought, and Sam and Mike, maybe you can chime in on this as well, because I thought at the time that the Adam LaRoche signing was a good signing.
I thought it was a good signing, but I'm thinking like, Garcia, he's not doing too well, and you got to give him a little bit of leeway, but he could be a good DH, and I think that role for LaRoche once I return him.
It's that Southside dartboard, though. I mean, that's kind of what it is. Kenny and Rick kind of blindfold themselves, and then they throw a dart, and, some of them land in the triple 20, and then some land in the wall. You never really know what you're going to get with the White Sox moves.
So the one thing that Alex Gordon would have going for him is that his name's not Adam.
Oh, yeah. How about it? Yeah, that'd be bad. So, Mike, you're going to buy Alex Gordon. You like Alex Gordon, and you're going to return Adam LaRoche.
You got it.
All right. We'll add you to the list. Thanks for checking in.
Thanks.
Naughty or nice? I think Mike was pretty nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was very nice. And I think he's right. I mean, and the reason I say that he's lucky his name is not Adam, not only because of Adam LaRoche, but also Adam Dunn.
Oh, proved to be come on. Do you have to go there?
Well, I'm just trying to explain what I meant in case people didn't know.
Since you're on the topic, though, I mean, why don't we just go to the Kenny Williams machine and just throw out some of his famous acquisitions, like when he traded for 38-year-old David Wells and Brian Ken Griffey.
Yeah.
And Manny.
Yeah.
Come on, you got something to add here.
Well, I mean, the Ken Griffey thing was a little late in the timing there.
So was the Manny thing.
Kotze, I think, was
Carl Everett a couple times, and Robbie Alomar.
Right.
And
Albert Bell. That was before that.
They didn't want to pay anybody.
Yeah,
and then
that's why the strike happened.
They paid Albert Bell. Another popular buy was Artemi Panarin. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a guy that a lot of people thought that wouldn't be able to live up to the American hockey game and you know, a much different skill set, not as much open ice, and he's been a guy that, I mean, if you need stock in a young hockey player around the league, not even with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and it's funny because you hear the questions that come up about, well, if he was that good, how come no one else saw this? Well, you have to understand, too, when Stan Bowman is looking for players now, you're looking for the low buy right now because of the salary cap situation, but you're also trying to figure in how they're going to fit in with the talent level that you already have. I can't say that Panarin would excel on many other teams in the NHL just based on his game complementing those that he's around right now. I mean, you're seeing it with Brandon Saad. I mean, Saad, I'm not going to go as far as to say that Saad was a quote-unquote Blackhawks system kind of a guy, but it certainly helps when you have all-world talent around you.
Can I return the 2 years of Mark Trestman that I had to suffer through?
You can return that, and I will give you double your money back.
That's something that I wish I can revisit history and just...
Yeah, I'll give you double your money back for that one.
Holy crap.
You deserve double or triple your money back.
That was one of the worst hires in the history of the city.
Yeah, it was not good. Yeah, there's no real way about... I mean, some of the other candidates that were on these lists, I mean, Bruce Arians and just one of them in particular, just to think about what he's doing. You know, unfortunately, every once in a while, you have to accuse an organization of going on the cheap. And I think that might have been what happened. Or they were so concerned about Jay Cutler at the time to bring in a guy that was supposedly the quarterback whisperer that didn't whisper. He barely broke a decibel. That was what happened.
We got a texter, 312-981-7200. Can I return Robbie Gould? I don't know about that. All the good he's done, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, the most accurate kicker in the history of the National Football League coming into this season. And, yeah, he has been kind of bad the last few games. But, you know, you can't blame the season on him.
847 says, great buy, Jason Hayward. Return John Fox. The experiment is over.
Wow. That's quick.
After one, is this a 5-year plan?
That's
isn't it?
Quick, yeah. You know, that's the thing about the Bears thing, too, because I think we may be kind of getting out ahead of ourselves here a little bit and expecting that John Fox, who's a veteran coach, to be able to work miracles with a team that, frankly, is not very talented. I mean, that's just basically what it comes down to. It's not a talented team right now. And I think a lot of it is Ryan Pace was saddled with a lot of bad picks from the previous regime. Some bad contracts. He hasn't, you know, didn't done himself any favors with the Kevin White draft choice, and the fact that the kid never saw the field this year. That can't bode well for him right now. But at the same time, I'm willing to give him another year and a half, 2 years.
I mean, you should.
You
and it's a
to.
4-year deal, not a 5-year deal. Yeah. Talent pretty barren.
Yeah, it's not there.
Not many tools in the shed. And I think if you look at this depth chart, Week one of next season, it's going to be a lot different than
it better be
what it is right now. I mean, we're talking from week 16 of year number one to week one of year number two. It better be different. I mean, they've got 9 or 10 draft picks.
Yeah.
And they're going to make some moves. Hopefully Kevin White is able to lace them up this year.
Boy, how disappointing. You know, and I think the part of the problem was not the fact that the guy was injured, but the fact that they hit it for as long as they did and try to sell it as day-to-day for 42 days? Really? Okay, I mean, I've been day-to-day for 48-plus years. I mean, you're day-to-day. We're all day-to-day, obviously, but come on. We're smarter than that. People are smarter than that.
We'll get some more of your phone calls, 312-981-7200. Mike's the leader in the clubhouse now on Buy and Return. What do you want to buy? What do you want to return in sports? Probably in Chicago. There's pizza on the line. We want to feed all those lingerers in your house on this holiday season. Dog days are over. They've been over.
Yes, Florence and the Machine.
The summer days have been over dog days for a long time.
Yeah.
720 WGN, it's The Beat. Sam Paniatovic and Andy Mazur, 520 in Chicago, taking you up to Girls Night Out with Hannah Stanley. The last Girls Night Out, by the way.
That's right.
I know she's got a lot planned tonight. We'll see Hannah. We'll talk to her before 7 o'clock. We were talking buy and return, and we got some texts here about what the what they'd like to return, what they'd like to buy. Derrick Rose, I'll return. That stole that one from me because I wanted to return him first. And by Russell Westbrook, they were in the same draft class, of course. And then this one's interesting because there's a question in there.
From 708.
From Charlie.
Would like to return the great Jason Hayward in return for Jeff Samardzija. Cubs don't need Hayward. Do you guys agree? And a word, no.
One word, no. I mean, I like the move for Hayward, and it was met with a lot of criticism, some positive, some negative. I mean, constructive criticism is positive, I think. But a lot of people were worried about the amount of money for a guy who's only going to hit 20 home runs, and that's really not what the deal is based around.
No.
You get a complete player, five tools.
Based around stolen bases and defense in the outfield. And a throwing arm that's among
walks, runs, scored.
Best. Yeah, and
he's going to create a lot of offense.
He's a prototypical sabermetrics kind of guy, and in that where he's patient at the plate, sees a lot of pitches per plate appearance, selective at the plate, is also a 3-time Gold Glove winner in a very short amount of time, and don't think that. Just because his track record has shown you that he's not a power hitter.
He can hit 35 homers.
He could hit 35 home runs there. And he's also the kind of guy now coming into his prime at 26 years old where a lot of guys figure out that they're not they're not gap-to-gap hitters. They're line drive hitters. And a line drive in most ballparks, as the great late Tony Gwynn told me, will play in any ballpark. A line drive swing will result in some home runs.
Especially at Wrigley, wind blowing out,
and with that
warm
lineup,
summery
and
day.
The way the lineup is constructed, too, there's not a lot of, at least the way it's looked, and again, the season hasn't started yet. You look at it, there's not a lot of weak spots. Not a lot of guys to pitch around.
Now, you brought up the sabermetric angle, and this is something that Theo and Jed and Jason McLeod kind of put into their calculators, and they really believe in.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest statistical moves that they've made under this regime has been the trade for Jake Arrieta.
Yeah.
Because statistically, he was pitching in lots of areas of bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The FIP, the fielding independent pitching, and Baltimore was struggling.
Yeah.
They zeroed in their numbers around Arrieta and thought, if we could tweak one or two things, this guy can be a star for us.
Yeah.
And that's worked out. So it's hard not to give this regime the benefit of the doubt.
And I agree. And I think, again, when you look back at what happened with the series against the Mets, and you kind of look at what happened toward the very end of the regular season last year, where you're looking for a consistent third and fourth starter, and they just weren't there. Okay, so Samardzija goes to the Giants. I wish him all the best. The Cubs have seen that, been there, done that. I mean, and he was only going to come to Chicago at their price. There was no chance that he was going to get a big, huge, long-term deal, or he would have gotten it already and he would have still been here. I mean, that's just the way I look at it. I think they helped themselves with Lackey. I really do. I think he fits the mold of what they did. And I really think that they helped themselves with Zobrist, a guy that is a Joe Maddon type of a guy, too, that can play anywhere on the field, kind of like a Chris Coughlin tried to do last year, but this guy's got a little more defensive ability in the infield.
Aren't you worried about the back half of the deal, though? I would be concerned because he's already 34.
Yeah, you know.
So 37, 38 for the last couple of years?
Yeah, you could be concerned. I mean, and I'm sure they've built in contingencies for all that stuff. I mean, the Hayward deal's got a couple of outs as well. I mean, they can he can opt out after the first three seasons, and depending on some plate appearance issues and things of that nature that I'm sure he's going to get to. So, yeah, I mean, obviously you go into every deal with a guy over 30 – with a little bit of caution.
Well, it's all rewarded, too, if they win.
Oh, sure it is.
So if you can get there and win one in that four-year deal.
I mean, you hope it happens earlier in the deal than later, obviously, and then you're fine.
With so many deals, we've seen the Pujols deal, which was supposed to be, all right, well, he's going to be paid for the first five.
Can I bring something? You brought up Pujols.
Okay.
And you said there was some criticism to the Hayward deal. I'm telling you, I look on Twitter, and Cardinal fans make it sound like Jason Hayward was there for 35 years. He was there for one season. He was there for 1 year.
And it wasn't even his choice. He got traded there.
Yeah. And was it the same? I don't remember the same outburst when Albert Pujols decided that he was going to spurn them when he had a choice and go into free agency.
I think there's a lot more social media now than there was, 2011?
Yeah.
When he signed?
I mean, that was...
I remember it a little bit, but no, it's been hate-filled. Although Pujols didn't leave for the Cubs. Some people thought he was going to,
that's true.
You know who I'm talking about.
Exactly,
I thought he was going to come here and play for the Cubs forever. But that doesn't mean that it's less of a big deal for, you know, no matter where you go, you left St. Louis, but for Hayward to come to the Cubs, I mean, never happened before with a big free agent.
That was embarrassing. That was some of the worst stuff I have seen.
Yeah, death threats.
On Twitter. It was just, come on, people. It's at the end of the day, it's baseball. You know, it's your baseball team. Okay, life goes on. I mean, life's been going on the north side of Chicago for 108 years. People have survived. People have lived.
And somebody new to that culture, Adam Warren, by the way, former Yankee right-hander. He was the big fish in the trade. Cubs got rid of Starlin Castro, brought in Adam Warren, and then shortstop Brendan Ryan, who they cut.
Mm-hmm, immediately.
They have since cut him, and they will pay him $1 million never to play for the Chicago Cubs. Adam Warren, he found out about the trade watching television on vacation with his wife. They were at a restaurant in St. Lucia, and they have this rule in the family where they don't keep the phones on. The phones go off and go in a different room, so he's at a restaurant with his wife, and on the bottom of the screen it says, Yankees have traded Adam Warren to the Cubs. So you'd have to imagine they were trying to get a hold of him and couldn't do it, so then they made the trade anyway, and he's now coming to the Cubs, but that's a heck of a way to find out you've been dealt.
He's an intriguing arm, too.
They said they didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
They couldn't sleep the first night. They were worried.
That's amazing. There's been stories about that. I've got guys that have been hiking in the, you know, wherever in Europe that have found out about trades. I remember being around a guy in San Diego who found out he was on a European, he was on a hiking trip and he was backpacking through Europe. You can't get a hold of a guy. He didn't know for like a week.
I give him a lot of credit for being able to turn the phone off.
Yeah, mine's on right
for
here.
For 2 or 3 days to turn the phone off and not look at anything? I mean, that's, unfortunately, we're in the business where we have to be plugged in, you know, if something happens. I mean, I've been off work and out of the state and, you know, the Cubs make a big deal. You know, they trade for Anthony Rizzo or whatever and you got to drop everything you're doing and get there. But that's impressive. It's pretty liberating to be off that thing.
Could you do it?
Probably not. I wish I could.
Yeah. I don't think I could either.
Maybe I'll throw it in the bunker and just play golf.
Yeah.
Because I can't. I've got to straighten out the phone situation and get the golf game going.
Yeah.
But anyways, I'm still returning Derrick Rose's contract.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's a bad deal right now. Revisionist history, obviously easy to go back and correct that mistake. But, and really not a mistake. I mean, you're talking about a young guy that was basically in the prime of his career.
Thank you, Veronica. Before we get in to the beat on 720 WGN, we want to remind you about the Blackhawks trip to Minneapolis, where you can come with WGN Radio and spill the hockey-filled three-day weekend away in Minneapolis, February 20th. Through the 22nd, chartered coach to the Twin Cities to see the outdoor alumni game at TCF Bank Stadium on the University of Minnesota campus. And then on Sunday, it's Blackhawks hockey, Central Division rival Minnesota Wild. Those two teeing them up at Coors Light NHL Stadium Series, the outdoor game. And your tour includes accommodations at the Hampton Inn, Minneapolis downtown, steps away from all the nightlife and restaurants. Sunrise Tours has the info, 800-881-8804. That's 800-881-8804 to book your tour or to find pricing and booking info, WGNradio.com/events. I can't wait to see Troy Murray on those skates.
I got to relook at those rosters because I wonder, you know, back in the heyday, Blackhawks North Stars was as good, if not better, than it ever was between the Hawks and the Canucks and the Hawks and the Blues, to the point where there was a fight on the ice before the officials even came out during warmups. Wayne Van Dorp was number 25, I believe, for the Blackhawks. Got into something. I can't remember who it was with the North Stars, but there were like 90 penalty minutes handed out before the game even started. I remember the Dino Cicerellis, the Dino, chance.
Dino's playing.
Yeah, Dino and Neil Broughton and Keith Acton, and they had Brian Bellows and Basil McRae and Mike Modano.
Most of those guys you named are playing. Yeah. So here are your notables for the Blackhawks. Okay. Got Murray Bannerman. Allen.
That's awesome.
Chris Chelios, Eric Daze, Steve Conroyd, Troy Murray, Brian Noonan, Jack O'Callaghan, Jeremy Roenick, Denny Savard, Jimmy Waite, and they're coached by Tony Esposito.
Nice.
And here are some guys from Minnesota. You said Brian Bellows and Neil Broughton, Jack Carlson, Dino Cicerelli. You've got Darby Hendrickson, Mike Modano, Gordy Roberts, Brian Ralston, Tom Younghans. Some throwbacks.
I tell you, that's good. I mean, that was some quality hockey that used to go on between those. And I believe the Bannerman call was during a series against the Stars. I think that was against the Stars.
The old Pat Foley call.
Yeah.
Could be.
I think it was. I'm almost positive it was against Minnesota. I want to say it was either 82 or 83, if I'm not mistaken. I may have to look that up when we have a chance here.
I don't know if you've ever had a bad trip, and not to segue off of our Blackhawks trip to Minnesota on a coach bus, but let's do it.
Yeah.
This is probably 4 years ago. And this is before I started doing UIC men's basketball. I was announcing UIC women's basketball back in the day. And we had a road trip middle of December, probably around the 15th. We're going to play Indiana State in Terre Haute.
Terre Haute.
Yes. Two-lane expressways. And by expressways, I mean highways.
Yeah.
If there's a problem with the roads, everybody's stuck for hours. So there was a snowstorm, blizzard, what have you. We're talking 10 inches of snow. 2012, probably. And the bus gets caught trying to get off the exit ramp.
Ugh.
The bus won't move because Bob, the bus driver, had the bright idea to try and ford over the snow patch on the exit ramp. It was so snowy, and nobody had gotten off on this exit for probably hours. So we had to get off because Terre Haute was down this exit. So the bus is kind of going through, and you know that feeling when the bus stops moving?
Yes.
It ends in the team and myself and some of the coaches and one of the trainers having to try and push the bus up to the main road, which was about a half a mile away in a snowstorm on our way to a game.
Mm.
Doesn't get much worse than that. So then we got blown out by about 30 because everybody was exhausted from having to move the bus. So that was one of the fun. Looking back, and I think of, you know, memories about Christmas and sports and all that, getting caught with the women's basketball team in rural Indiana is probably at the list of things I will always look back at and just laugh at.
I've got two of them, and both occurred when I was working in San Diego for the University of San Diego men's basketball team. And in 2010, we were playing in the Diamond Head Classic out there in Maui. And, Honolulu. Sorry. We were in Waikiki.
Mm-hmm.
And Christmas there is so much different than anywhere in the contiguous 48, where they know it's such a tourist area that every store was open Christmas Eve. Christmas Day. The only reason I remember that is because going through security on the way to Hawaii, I ripped my work bag, and I had to go get another one. There was a hole in it through when it went through the X-ray machine.
Notes and markers.
Oh, it was
highlighters.
Yeah, it was just everywhere. So I actually was able to buy a new work bag on Christmas Day. So after that experience, the people I was traveling with, we decided we were going to go get some ice cream because it was, you know, fairly warm. We go into the local Haagen-Dazs. And we're in there. We make our order. We're just kind of off to the side eating. And next thing we know, we see these people coming in with these beige vests and earpieces and little, you know, the cords from their connected down the back of their shirts. And we're thinking, okay, what is going on here?
Start emptying your pockets.
And it's like, I didn't steal anything. I don't know who these people are. And the next thing you know, right behind them were the Obama kids.
Sasha and Malia.
Yeah, coming to get some ice cream on Waikiki.
On Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day. Well, it was later in the day. It was like 5 or 6 o'clock at night. So maybe the dessert was going on at that point. Or, they were on their own with their babysitter and that kind of thing. And not every day you see the president's kids walking into a Haagen-Dazs on Waikiki Beach.
In Honolulu.
Yeah, so that was one of them. The other one, kind of along the lines of you, I was working for this team again, and we flew to it. Play in a little tournament in New Orleans. So the buses would be going with these big coach buses like you were talking about. And I don't know if you've ever been to the New Orleans airport, but the area where you come off of baggage claim and you meet your ride, the ceilings are kind of low, but they have these light fixtures that kind of hang down. And our bus driver didn't realize that he couldn't continue to go the way he was going until you heard this horrific screech on the top of the bus. The air conditioning unit on top of the bus came flying off.
Oh, no.
And the bus was stuck.
Ugh. That's the worst. There's no easy way to move a bus.
Couldn't move the bus.
No. You can't.
So we're all like, what do we do? You know, do we get out of the bus? Because there's electrical stuff outside. You don't want to be, you know, caught in that. So we all got out. And the interesting thing was the New Orleans Police Department came and, you know, they have to file a report. And they were asking all of us our names and things. That, you know, we had to give them our IDs and like we caused
like
this.
Like you did something wrong.
Yeah. So traveling with college teams and, you know, in the Midwest, it's tough. It's tough this time of year.
Yeah, well, and then you get to the hotel and they don't have the reservations done. I mean, this was the nightmare trip that you hear about, you know, in movies where the bus is 3 hours late and then the hotel rooms aren't ready because somebody in the office didn't call the right hotel. Yeah. And so then we had to move hotels and put all the bags back on the bus. And then, you know, you're worried because the snow is still falling. This is a snowstorm. So if you thought that was a lot of snow,
oh yeah,
it's going to keep coming down and keep piling. So then game ends at, you know, 10, 11 o'clock. Then you have to trudge right back on that five-hour road, get out of town, get back to and you can't wait. Once you finally see the skyline, you know that you're almost there.
Thank goodness.
You know, there's no more cornfields and tumbleweeds.
Home sweet home.
Oh. I didn't think we were going to – I didn't know because what are you going to do? You know, what's AAA going to do?
Yeah.
AAA is going to send a truck that's an eighth of the size of the bus to try and get you to – oh.
Not good.
No, good. Certainly not.
It tests your mettle.
Yeah, that's for sure. We also want to congratulate Mike who called in and won the pizza from Lou Malnati's for the buy and return the holiday style. He made a couple White Sox moves. So we're going to send Mike that pizza from Lou Malnati's. Lou Malnati's, some of the best deep dish pizza in Chicago. We'll take care of that. Concussions starting to enter the mind of a lot of parents.
Yes.
A lot of, you know, Mike Ditka said the other day he wants his kids to start playing golf or his grandkids to start playing golf. And Dr. Bennett Omalu, who is the headline of that movie about the NFL and concussions. And the NFL didn't like what he had found.
No, and you know I haven't seen the movie yet. I don't know.
I've seen some snippets, and I have seen some interviews that he's done about what the NFL actually told him because the NFL wants to police a lot of things, but when that word concussion pops in, they start to put up blinders.
Yeah, the line was this is a corporation that owns a day of the week like church used to, you know, and that's basically what it says. So it kind of gives you an idea.
And there was a dirty hit last week in the NFL. We will revisit that, talk about some player safety rules. And
the Bannerman game, by the way, I went back and looked. It was against the North Stars, and it was in 1982 in the playoffs. And it was Keith Acton that was driving in on the breakaway. It was Acton in alone. Bannerman!
Acton is not on the roster for the alumni game.
We could recreate that.
But I asked Troy about going up against Modano, and he said, don't worry. I'll have something ready for him. So I'm like, all right, Troy.
I love that.
Our very own Troy Murray playing in that Blackhawks Wild alumni game. And, of course, the Blackhawks and Wild play on that Sunday, February 22nd. Grab a timeout here, 720 WGN. .548 in Chicago. It's the Beat, 720 WGN. Sam Panayotovich and Andy Mazur. Hold on to your heads. Move away from sharp objects. Talk about concussions here.
Yeah.
And the movie, if you haven't seen it, which I believe it came out in the last handful of weeks?
Yeah, I think the last handful of days, I want to say.
So it's called Concussion, and it's a movie that was supposed to try and hold the NFL accountable for the CTE crisis, which is going on in football with hits to the head and dangerous safety-related plays that are going the wrong way. And here's a line. I guess we'll kick it off with this.
Okay.
Slate.com wrote a review of Concussion. And here's the big, bold headline from that article. It says, Concussion telegraphs its moral outrage with the relentlessness of an interception-prone quarterback. in which nobody is held accountable, pretty much. So, not good, because this was supposed to shed light on exactly what was going on, and I think the NFL was able to squash a lot of what should have come out of this movie.
You know, I guess at the end of the day, it's a sport where you collide. I mean, there's really no way of getting around it. And sometimes, and I've talked to former players and people that have been around it, and if you play a game where you try not to get hurt, you get hurt, especially in a physical, violent sport such as football, where they compare the every snap collision between an offensive line and a defensive line like being in a 30-mile-an-hour car crash every time you do it. So, you know, I've watched Dan Hampton walk around this building, and after all the knee surgeries and the broken fingers and things, you know, you count yourself lucky for getting out of it, you know, with the, you know, the grace that he has. And you worry about some of these guys because the symptoms don't show right away. I mean, they'll last. And it's not just football. Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, hockey, the Steve Montador situation is an awful situation that, you know, the former Hawk player that committed suicide, and all because of the ramifications of concussions. You know, Dave Duerson is featured in this movie, you know, and they credit him with doing a loyal and a brave thing by, you know, not hurting his brain when he decided to end his life.
And you've got, you know, Mike Webster, who played center for the Steelers, Junior Seau. I mean, the list is long and it continues.
It's sad.
I just...
But, you know, they ask you the question always. Would you rather, you know, be a successful football player in the prime of your life and bubble and deal with this later? Everybody that's 21, 22 years old is going to say, yeah, sign me up.
Yeah. Short-term gratification and long-term concern.
Right.
So that's the way it goes. But I guess the movie, and the NFL had supposedly made some calls to Sony to soften the script.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, come on now. You know, we've got a shield to protect. We've got a league to protect. And,
right.
You know, you're never going to get the full story.
No. I mean, and, you know, the league can do – it's a tough situation. I see their point. Again, you know, you're not going to be able to do so much to prevent this. I mean, they've tried, you know, different things, especially when you're teaching younger players. I had a chance to actually be around a Pee Wee football team this year and helping coach with a buddy of mine. Where you talk about heads-up football, and that's always preached now at the younger levels, is to always keep your head up, you know, so that you can see who you're colliding with and you don't go helmet to helmet. And, you know, the penalties have been stricter on the field for head-to-head collisions and situations like that. You a blow to the head, you know, is a 15-yard penalty. Sometimes it could warrant into an ejection. You know, they have the independent doctors now in the press boxes and on the sidelines where they have their concussion protocol. So to say they haven't done anything is kind of short-sighted, but at the same time, it's a huge issue that it's not going away. It's a violent sport.
I guess the headline of the movie, too, and Omalu looks at the case of Mike Webster. Mm-hmm. They examine, you know, his brain after his death. He died at age 50, and before his death, he was putting teeth back in his mouth using super glue.
Mm.
And when he had back pain, he had somebody get him with a taser gun. Not normal pain.
No, Ronnie Lott.
Right.
Had the dislocate. They cut his finger off. I mean, they cut the tip of his finger off. I mean, these are guys that are, you talk about tough. I mean, to me, I look at hockey players and I look at football players as the tough guys. And sometimes it's not about just saying you're tough. It's about Duncan Keith getting hit with a hockey puck in the mouth and missing two shifts while he, you know, gets sewn up. You know, it's Dan Hampton, you know, that's gone through 13 different knee surgeries and still lines up and misses one game, you know, or misses a play.
Yeah, and seeing those guys walk, I mean, him and OB walking into the studios, it's
and
not
Cause,
pretty.
Cause, too, I mean, you know, with the knee injuries that he suffered.
It takes time to get from elevator to door.
Yeah, but it's what you love to do, and that's the hard part about, you know, being able to see the forest through the trees when you're playing as opposed to what's going to happen afterwards. Now, again, the whole lawsuit that went down with, you know, the Players Association and the league about, you know,
$765 million.
Yeah, paying players, you know, post playing days.
But that wasn't even a lot of money.
No, it was nothing
per player.
It was kind of peanuts compared to, you know, what the actual toll was on these guys. That's the thing I think that angers a lot of the players that are in it right now. again, you can't do anything short of, you know, turning it into a two-hand touch league. And still, you're going to have mishaps where you're going to collide with somebody. It happens every day.
I couldn't believe the penalty. This was last Sunday. It was Carolina against the Giants. And Odell Beckham Jr., who is the face of the receiving franchise in the NFL right now. He's on the cover of Madden. He's a two-time Pro Bowler. Everybody remembers that one-handed catch in the end zone last year. I believe it was against Dallas. He comes out, and after having a rough first quarter, he dropped the touchdown pass. Josh Norman was the corner for Carolina. They were chirping back and forth, and you saw the play.
Yeah, helmet to helmet.
He runs up from 10 yards away and leaves his feet, launching his body and, namely, his helmet right at a defenseless Josh Norman and smoked him.
Yep.
A blindsided hit against a defenseless player, and the league only suspended Beckham Jr. for one game.
And the appeal is going on, and, you know, they're...
Well, they had the appeal, and they upheld the decision, but there were rumblings that,
it was going to be overturned.
They might overturn it because Sunday Night Football needs to highlight the best players.
Yeah, and you
that
know
that was a vicious hit, not a football play. I mean, we've seen people paralyzed on football fields.
Yeah, Daryl Stingley. I mean, that you know that happened with him and Jack Tatum and things of that nature. That you know it's you know obviously I've never played football at a high level where I can say what you know your mindset is when you're in a game. I can only imagine how amped up you get just with being physically contacted every play and, you know, people questioning your manhood and things of that nature. And it takes a special kind of a guy to be able to endure all that and play that game for as long as a lot of the guys we know have played it.
I couldn't believe the hit. I mean, that hit made no sense. No. I mean, you're risking your own body. You're risking somebody else's body. And given all that's going on,
and
all that's going around, all the noise about concussions and brain injuries and damage to brains and the dementia that 6,000 of the last 22,000 players that have retired will at some day develop dementia.
Yeah.
They don't care.
It's sad. And, you know, to get back to that hit too, I mean, with Beckham also then squawking about why he was afraid. He was fearing for him. He said he feared for his safety because the Panthers used to and won't be doing it anymore. Bring the bats out during warmups to kind of, you know, warm up and, you know, they loosen up by swinging wooden baseball bats, and he claims that he was being threatened and being yelled at and called different things during warm-ups.
I mean, I don't care what they said to him,
but you don't go out and do that. And you're there was no, it was without warrant, without regard for human life, so to speak.
I saw him laughing it up with Cam Newton before the game, so it couldn't have been that bad.
Yeah, it was just a weak. Explanation for
I did remember the bat though because they were it was about cleaning wood or knocking wood or something.
Chopping wood.
That some maniac with a bat.
Yeah,
that he wasn't even like playing in the game, just holding the bat, swinging the bat, and pointing it at Odell Beckham Jr.
And Ron Rivera was hilarious, as frustrated as he was after that whole incident, said that none of that was true, that there was no taunting, no anything like that. And he's banning the bats now because he says if he didn't, he was going to hear from the league, and he called it again the No Fun League.
Well, I guess they did it with the Saints. The Saints had a lot of dirty stuff going on. They were paying people to hurt people with the what did they call that? Bounty gate.
Bounty gate, yeah.
Everything's got a gate.
With Greg Williams, yeah.
Yeah, who was, dangerous sport, gets more and more barbaric.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see what my thought is after I see the movie. I mean, I don't want to make a comment about it because I haven't seen it yet, but you know, it's a delicate situation.
Before we check news, we'll bring in Tom here on 720 WGN. Hey, Tom, how goes it?
Hey, fine, thanks. Hey, just a quick point, and I believe it was shortly after the Mike Webster tragedy, but what people need to look at from an NFL standpoint is not only the concussion thing, but I believe the average life expectancy of an NFL player is still only about 58 or 57 years of age, which for an average male in the United States, it's about 16 to 17 years shy of normal life expectancy. And it's not only the concussions, it's the actual entire brutal sport. So that's what people sort of need to look at.
Yeah, the body takes a pounding. I mean, there's no doubt.
Yeah, and it's decisions, Tom, that they make, you know, normal decisions now when they retire 20 years later. I mean, like the Jim McMahon stuff, like he has to be reminded every day who his girlfriend is because he just can't remember who she is, and he's been with her for years.
Sure, and it's, you know, and it's a sad and real scenario, but it's also the back end realization of a profession you chose. It was like the guys in the 40s, 50s went into steel mills and things like that. It is sad. It is true. But my point would be is like, it is scary if, you want to choose NFL as a career, you may not, live an entire long life. But with the money and the stardom, that's a choice. I think they're all well aware of going into it.
Well said, Tom. Thanks for checking
in. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Have a happy new year.
You too.
Before we get to Adam Hoge, who's going to preview the Bears and Buccaneers, he's our WGN Radio Bears Insider. We check into the WGN Newsroom. This is Chicago's very own 720.
A good way to start off the 6 o'clock hour, a little Rolling Stones. Andy Mazur, Sam Panayotovich with you here on The Beat. 720 WGN. We'll talk a little Bears football coming up here, and I had to apologize to Sam for walking in here today a little bleary-eyed, and it wasn't because of any huge partying that I did last night on
bleary-eyed
on Christmas. You like that word, bleary?
I do.
There were certain networks that had quote unquote marathons of shows. I mean, obviously TBS had the Christmas Story thing. Okay, I might be the only one. I mean, I watched it a couple of times. I'm done. Okay.
Christmased out.
I'm moving on.
Well, now I'm Christmased out before Christmas because the music starts in November.
Yeah, that's true. And the, the decorations in the stores are right around Halloween. But I fell victim to IFC last night and their marathon of That 70s Show.
Yep.
Which to me was still one of the funnier shows of, the early 2000s and, and beyond. It jumped the shark, obviously, when Topher Grace left. And
one of the best TV dads ever.
Yo, Red. Red Foreman.
Red Foreman's one of the funniest.
I mean.
In your face. Angry. I think was he a Korean War vet?
Yeah.
And he came home and had a family and he just hated everything.
In the mythical place of Point Place, Wisconsin. I mean, a lot of people, Ashton Kutcher got his start basically on that. Mila Kunis, Topher Grace has been mentioned. But I found myself sitting down in my house looking at, maybe a couple of episodes. And the next thing I knew, it was like 8 hours later. And I'm still watching this thing.
And you get caught.
Like I had never seen the show before in my life. I'd seen these episodes. I was quoting the episodes. But I got lost. I got lost in That 70s Show. And it was... It was sad and fun all at the same time.
I made sure to get in my Home Alone yesterday.
Yeah, that's a good one to have. Yeah, that's a good one to have.
I had to get Home Alone, and I have to watch it around Christmas every year because the one-liners in Home Alone, I mean, we're talking all-time Christmas movies. Easy on the fluids, kid.
Yeah. Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern.
Yes.
Are the bad guys.
Harry and Marv.
Yeah, that's...
the rubber sheets are packed.
Yeah, Macaulay Culkin. It's hard to believe that someone that cute, that young, turned out to be what he was.
Did you see the video, by the way? This thing went viral. They took Macaulay Culkin in the present day, and they had him film, I think it's like a five-minute video of him being Kevin McAllister in the present.
Oh, really?
And he looks awful.
Yeah, he looks nothing, obviously, like he did.
I think the joke is that he was so perturbed by what had happened. He's now like a drug addict, and he's like itching the whole time. And he's like, you have no idea what happened to me. My family left me at home on Christmas. And I had to fight off these two evil bandits twice. Uh-huh. It was really funny.
Oh, that's good.
They did a really good
job.
Is that
like a Funny or Die thing?
Something like that. Yeah, one of those.
That's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, I was sucked in there. I just kind of sat there. It was the epitome of couch potato. I barely moved. I mean, I got up a couple of times, to go get something to eat and something to drink, and that was it.
Yeah, that thing ran through 2 a.m.
Yeah, and I saw the last one.
Merry Christmas. Yeah. Sitting there watching That 70s Show.
Mm-hmm. Ringing in the holiday with That 70s Show.
Well, I asked you if you had the Chinese food, and you said no.
No, I didn't have the Chinese food. I think I watched That 70s Show in lieu of a movie. That's usually how some non-celebrators celebrate
there's,
Christmas. Yeah.
There's, in my crew, there's 4 of us best friends, and 2 of them are scattered. One's in California and one's in Texas. And everybody gets back together.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, we got together. We all did our things with our families. And, you know, I got there probably about 10 o'clock. One showed up at 11. And we're doing the same thing. We're looking for a movie to watch. And then you're looking for something to eat.
Oh, yeah. And good luck.
Good luck. Well, we finally hit the roulette wheel on a pizza place in Brighton Park,
mm-hmm.
you know, like 42nd and Ashland or something. But you can't find anything to watch or eat usually.
No, you have to. You've got to plan ahead.
Everything.
And you
got to
plan ahead. You have to plan ahead because, you know, because the grocery stores aren't open late either, you know, Christmas Eve. I mean, so you have to really, you know, plan this thing out. You got to get gas in your car, that kind of thing, if you're not celebrating. I think last year I ended up watching Bad Santa, which, I mean, okay, it's R-rated for a reason. I won't get into a whole lot of it, but I was laughing my rear end off.
Yeah, we ended up with Ted 2 last night. I wasn't a fan of Ted 2.
Yeah.
Too much.
Ted 1 was really
the first one was good. This
good.
One was yeah. bad. Yeah. I wasn't feeling it. But I'll tell you one thing, though. Christmas, and I saw this story. I forget what state the person was from. It was about how to keep Christmas fresh. Mm-hmm. And this isn't just Christmas. It's anything you celebrate around the holidays. Right. It was a father, I believe, from either Minnesota or Michigan. He took his wife and his three kids. And rather than, you know, go to one location and open presents or whatever, he set up this tour, I guess, so to speak,
okay.
of all the places that this family had been to, over, like important places.
Right.
Like maybe they had a restaurant. Or maybe there was a church or, you know, grandma. So he built this tour of, you know, places that the family would remember. And I guess they were all really emotional because,
that's cool.
you know, how many things change over the years. But they hit all the hot spots of childhood for these kids.
That's awesome.
And I guess, that, you know, that was something that kind of got my wheels spinning, thinking of all the places that we used to go to. There was an Italian restaurant in Calumet City called John's. We used to go there every Christmas Eve.
Hmm.
And that was probably from, I don't know, 1995 until 2003. Haven't been there since, but that'd be something that would go on
so
our
go back. Yeah.
You know, like a hot spot in your family.
Kind of like It's a Wonderful Life without really not being born.
Sort of.
Yeah, kind of seeing it from the outside, from what you used to see, it, and then yeah. Okay, that was a weak attempt, but you get what I'm talking about.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Because you're kind of going back. They're taking you back to the places you were as a kid. You know, you're going back, but you were actually born. You can see it.
Yeah.
Because you're there.
What would be on your list? What would be on the Mazur family list? Would it be
yeah,
any?
You know, it was, I'm trying to remember, we had neighbors across the street that had always had a big gathering of their family. And my brother and I would go over there, you know, a week or so, actually 2 weeks before Christmas when they put their tree up. And we would help them decorate and things of that nature, knowing that we didn't celebrate, which was cool. I always have really enjoyed seeing how other people celebrate their holidays as compared to how I celebrate mine. And this goes back a long time, even before then. And we would go to their family party. We were like part of their family.
You crash it?
We didn't have to crash. We were actually invited. That's where I saw the famous Patrick Ewing tip-in on Christmas Day at the buzzer. Yeah, that's where I was in their family room across the street.
It's crazy
that.
If you think about, you know, just go back the last 10 years, all the different people that you've seen and now that maybe you don't see anymore, just like the range of people that Christmas sort of brings together, and some unfortunately have passed, and you know, that happens. That's the way life goes sometimes, but you know, there are a lot of good memories, and I hate that sometimes it takes until Christmas to sort of feel that way.
You're right, and it's, you know, you get that way around this time of year, not just with Christmas or with Hanukkah or with Kwanzaa or with Festivus or whatever you celebrate, but you know, you get that feeling New Year's Eve, and everybody's talking about New Year's resolutions and things like that.
Let me sign up at a gym.
Well, exactly. And you know, the thing is, I had these people when I lived in California who basically said to me, okay, you're spending New Year's Eve with us. We have plenty of room for you. You know, we'll do what we need to do, and we'll watch the bowl games on New Year's Day. But you have to have a New Year's resolution. We're going around the room, and you have to have one. I'm thinking to myself, these things are so stupid.
I don't even have one. I don't think I've had one for a while.
So my resolution, to show how ridiculous I thought New Year's resolutions were, and no offense if you think that they're cool, if it's a way that you get motivated, that's fine. I'm not begrudging you that. But I always said, my New Year's resolution for 2015, 14, 13 is to be taller. And so far it hasn't worked.
No, it's not going to either. I don't think you're ever going to hit that one out of the park.
Yeah, I don't either. But that's kind of how I really felt about New Year's resolutions, to be honest with you. Happy holidays, everyone, from the beat. 720 WGN. Andy Mazur and Sam Panayotovich sitting in here tonight with you until 7 o'clock. We have covered a lot of topics here tonight, but we have not discussed, I guess we've saved the proverbial best for last, and at least the one that I think is the hot-button issue, and it just reminds me every time I start to think that this town could become a Hawks town or a Cubs town or a Sox town, how much it is an NFL town and how much it always will be.
Which makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't either. Never will. That's just me.
Yeah, it's just fact. Because I think the hottest buttons that you can push are during a bad bear season. And I think
there's been a lot of them.
And unfortunately, there have been a lot since the Super Bowl, back in 06, 07,
I thought you were going to say since 85.
Well, even back
that
then.
Too.
No, yeah, that's true. There have been some lean years. I mean, and let's be honest. And whether it be, for some bad decisions, some bad drafting, some unfortunate circumstances, I don't know what to put. I think it's tough right now for me to sit here as a responsible person and lash out at John Fox.
No,
the season. I can lash out at John Fox for some of the games this year where I don't think they've been really ready to play.
Or clock management.
And clock management. But I can't really lay all the blame at his feet right now, because I just don't think that he's playing with a full complement of talent, be it on the offensive line. I mean, when Shea McClellan plays in a game and Timu Solani or whatever his name was.
John Timu.
Yeah, that guy comes in and has more tackles than anybody. A guy they picked up off the street the day before.
Whatever. Tackles are sort of misleading. Have you ever heard Hamp and OB talk about tackles?
Because
talking about Bears post game with Hamp, OB, and Kaz. Carmen brings up that Shea McClellan had 15 tackles or whatever, and OB or Hamp said, that's because he's chasing everybody.
He's right. No, he's right.
Because he messed up at the initial point,
but
he's got to run you down.
And my point is, I wanted to say Timu Solani, and the other point was that I wanted to make sure that he was active. I mean, the guy was active. He was around the ball. But, the whole thing with Kyle Long and moving an all-pro guy from guard to tackle.
He made him a rookie all over again.
Exactly. And it's not, I really think Kyle Long's gone about this the right way. I mean, he's wearing it. And, I feel badly for the guy. But at the same time, he's being paid as a professional. And if they didn't see something in him, they wouldn't have ever made the move.
I just look at this Bears team and I don't see an identity anymore.
There's no key identity.
And, when you used to come in here, and it's ironic that we talk about this in the same week where the Bears play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Buccaneers have sort of started to reshore that defense under Lovie Smith, and this is only year two. So, you give a coach 3 or 4 years to finally have everything he needs to hopefully win. They're not good defensively. They suck on special teams.
Yeah.
And on offense now, I mean, Adam Gase gets lauded for his brilliant game plan. Like, getting Jay Cutler not to turn it over makes you a genius? It doesn't.
No.
I mean, have you seen their game plans the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think earlier in the year when there was more health, because that's been another thing.
But every team's hurt.
No, I get that.
I mean,
every
team goes through it.
But when you have your full complement, I think you open up your playbook a little bit more than you do when you have backups at every position that are playing. And there were a couple of games, and I wish I could remember exactly which ones. I thought that Gase called a brilliant game. But that's one out of, 14 at this particular
point.
Right,
consistency.
And there's none. There has not been any. I mean, you get a guy like Martellus Bennett who's upset about not being targeted and not being considered part of the offense. I mean, he was pretty much your only option when Eddie Royal and Jeffrey is out.
And Kevin White.
And Kevin White's not,
number one
not even on the field. You got Forte banged up. You got Jeremy Langford coming in. You got Kadeem Carey coming in. You got Marquise Wilson who gets hurt. You get the kid from ISU Meredith coming in, and then he's no longer part of things. It was so fluid. And again, I just think it goes back to zero. There's not a lot of talent. There's just not a lot of talent.
Yeah, and good
on this
teams
team.
Win games. Bad teams lose games.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been so many games. If you look at that Bears schedule where it's a 3-point loss. Or it's a 2-point loss to the Denver Broncos when they didn't go for it, or they went for it, didn't kick the field goal,
and
lost by 2.
8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
And against San Francisco, the worst team, I think, on the Bears' schedule this year, comes into Soldier Field and wins on a Hail Mary in overtime.
Yeah,
it's just the chances to win, and people hinge behind this all the time. Well, they could be They could be 7-6.
But they're not.
They're not.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, the other stat, you know, we talk about tackles being kind of overrated. You know, I'm tired of hearing about how close the games have been, too. Because you know what? In a close game, you should have won it. Especially when you had the lead.
But a lot of those Mark Trestman games were blowouts. So
true.
People try and spin it into positive ways. We're losing, but at least, damn it, we're competitive.
Yeah. So here's what I think the future kind of holds. And it's kind of hard to sum up in, you know, 6 or 7 minutes. But at the same time, I don't envy Ryan Pace one bit right now. And I think he's got some really challenging decisions ahead of him, especially offensively, coming up in this offseason. You know, you've got Alshon Jeffrey, who has a world of talent, but it doesn't serve you well when he's in warmups and he's not dressed for a game.
Can't stay healthy.
It doesn't help you at all when he's not on the field. You know, you've got Matt Forte, who showed last year the ability to be a very multi-dimensional running back, catching passes and, again, a little bit on the health situation and a little bit longer in the tooth and getting a little bit older. You know, you've got Langford and Carey behind him. Is it a situation where you franchise one of these guys and you take your chances on a one-year deal with either? I think if it's me, I'm probably taking my chance more on Alshon Jeffrey than I am Matt Forte. That's just me. But I don't envy these decisions that he's got to make, especially inheriting what he inherited.
That was a big conversation, or a big topic of conversation, I guess, on Wednesday, Matt Forte's contract situation. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's unrestricted at the end of the year. And the quote that he gave out, and I read it, quote, "I mean, I want to return, but if you're saying, am I hopeful that I do return, ? There's not much to hope for right now."
And I kind of agree with him. I mean, I think that if you can replace his money and gear it towards perhaps, you know, a franchise tag type of situation with Jeffrey, hoping that maybe next year is the year he stays healthy for an entire season. But again, the track record hasn't been there. But do you want to be the team that lets him go and then all of a sudden he puts it together and is healthy?
You're talking about Jeffrey?
Yeah.
I'd rather let Forte go if you're asking me that question. I mean, you're going to pay a 29-year-old running back who's given you 8 really good years.
Great seasons.
And the average running back shelf life is 3. So he's already 5 ahead of what the average running back gives an average team. You've pretty much seen the best of Matt Forte.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting quicker.
No.
Not going to get much stronger.
No.
Not going to get more elusive. I'll tell you what. What if the Patriots come in and say to Matt Forte, hey, we need a running back that can catch passes out of the backfield, the occasional run. I mean, he fits in perfectly.
Like the old Kevin Falk mode, you know?
He fits in like that type of running back.
Yeah.
Fits in perfectly with New England. Now, I don't know if he's willing to take a pay cut.
Yeah.
But if Bill Belichick and Tom Brady recruit him and say, hey, Matt,
we got
a really nice thing going on here. What we need is a running back.
Yeah, we got these things on our fingers. They're called Super Bowl rings. We want to get you one.
It's enticing. I mean, would you rather play New England or play in Chicago? I mean, I don't want to play here.
No.
What's the point?
There's not much to it right now. And, see if you're with me on this, too, because as much as we are hearing the praise of Adam Gase and how he's going to be a one-year guy, he's going to get a head coaching job next year. Okay, more power to him if he does. I mean, I don't begrudge anybody.
He's gone for the right job.
Yeah, exactly. To me, the guy that should get credit for doing something this year, basically doing it with nothing, is Vic Fangio.
Yep.
I mean, you look at the secondary that this guy's had to work with.
The worst in the league,
probably. Are you kidding me?
It's awful.
And still making it somewhat respectable. I mean, you know, the only game they got really, you know, there are a couple of games that got blown out. One you can't count because Jimmy Clausen started.
Yeah, the 3 early games are the ones that come to mind. I mean, the one against Arizona and then the 26-0 loss at Seattle.
But Fangio's the guy to me that should be getting a ton of credit that I don't think he's getting. Not that he gets into it for the credit, obviously, but, you know, Gase has been this wonder kid who, you know, whatever. But I digress.
I'll tell you what. There have been more competitive Cub teams in the last 20 years than there have been competitive. And I'm not kidding.
No, you're right.
There have been more competitive Cub teams than there have been competitive Bear teams.
It's a good point.
But it's a Bears town.
Yeah,
they won one
point.
Super Bowl.
I don't know. I hear you. Well, if you have thoughts, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also text us on that line as well. We will take a quick timeout and then get into the newsroom and continue with more of The Beat here on 720 WGN. This is The Beat on 720 WGN. Andy Mazur, Sam Panagotovich with you here till 7. Hannah Stanley will be by at that particular point in time.
Your favorite song. Don't you drive around and listen to that?
That was my request. I have no idea what it was, but that was my request.
That sounds like a Mazer cruise around song.
No. Too much bass. Much bass for me.
That's the way it works now.
Rattle the speakers.
Yeah.
Think there's something in the door.
Too much bass, not enough lyrics.
I'd take it into the dealership and, I'd look like a fool. I do that well enough on my own without having to go to the dealership to do that. We've been talking Bears, and we invite you to join us if you'd like. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number, and we welcome in Patrick. Patrick, you're on the beat. How you doing?
Hey, I'm fine, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. What's on your mind?
My thing is I've been watching the Bears ever since I was in high school. I want to go back ever since, 1984. The most disappointing thing about the ownership and how the media covers a lack of coverage of the ownership, they don't put them on blast enough for me as far as, they're brutal. That's the only way I can put it with the McCaskies and ownership. They broke my heart when they let Wilbur Marshall go to the Washington Redskins, and it's just been a big old dredge hole ever since then. For the first time in ever to get a head coach to coach that team. Just to have a title of a head coach. Come on, man, that's brutal. And then, just loss after loss after loss. I think people should stop supporting the McCaskies and stop filling up that stadium and stop buying all the Bears gear, man. I know it's not going to happen, but you have to hit these people where it hurts. Because the city of Chicago is the greatest city I've grew up in, and they deserve a lot better than what that crap ownership has been giving them. I'm just fed up. It's ridiculous. I stay in Racine, Wisconsin, and been up here for 9 years. It's brutal listening to these Packer fans chirp, but they got the right to. But, man, the city of Chicago is the best, hands down, is the best city on the planet, if you ask me. And I love the Chicago Bears, but, man, the ownership is it's crappy, and it's been crappy for a long time.
Tired of losing, Patrick. I can hear it. You're tired of losing.
Man, I've been tired, man. Like I said, when Walter Payton donated 100,000 pair of kangaroos at Better Boys Foundation back in the days, man, I was just in love with him. I'm still in love with the Bears, but it's just so brutal. I'm telling you, it is brutal.
Yeah.
It hurts, man.
I hear it. And it's passionate, man. I get it. I get it. Patrick, appreciate the call. Happy holidays. Happy New Year to you.
Y'all too, man. Thanks.
All right, Patrick. I think he's the voice of a lot of people because, to me, it kind of jumped the tracks when Michael got put in charge because I don't think he had any business running a football team.
But see, that's a fan right there that is just tired of all the losing.
Yeah,
and you can hear it in their voice.
It's passion. And none of that, you can tell when someone's just trying to get on the radio and make a point. That's not where Patrick was coming from. That was all from the heart because you can tell. There's a lot of passion there. Anyway, we'll continue with our Bears talk here as we welcome in Adam Hoge, who is getting ready to cover the beloved Bears in Tampa Bay and just arriving down there as well. So, Adam, we appreciate you taking the time here, man. How you doing?
Good. Hope you guys, everyone had a happy Christmas and just getting ready for this game tomorrow. I don't know what it means anymore.
Neither do we. We don't either. We've kind of been discussing that.
Yeah, I can give you a couple things to keep an eye on. One is I wouldn't be surprised to see them try Harold Jones Quarty at safety again. Chris Pierzynski struggled the last couple weeks, and Harold Jones Quarty was in there earlier in the season when Antrell Roll was hurt and then kind of lost that spot the second time Roll went down. So that makes a lot of sense to me, getting a young guy in there. That's really, I think, what these last 2 weeks are about, is evaluating the roster as much as you can. So if you have a younger guy that you want to get a look at, even if it means some growing pains and maybe a big player too, it's worth getting them out there, I think.
This is the second year in a row, Adam, where I've talked to you from location. You've been on your way to cover game 16 or 17, and I don't want to talk about this year anymore. I want to talk about next year. Now, that says a lot about what the Bears are doing here. They're obviously still rebuilding under Pace and Fox. How much different is this depth chart going to look in week one of next year as opposed to where it is right now?
Yeah, I expect it to look a lot different. They changed as, and we had the same conversation last year, Sam, and they changed it as much as they could. You can't replace all 53 guys, but you identify the guys that you wanted to keep from the previous regime, and you make a trade like trading Brandon Marshall, and you bring in replacements. You kind of go. I mean, they're going to go through that whole process again. I don't think anybody. There's very few guys that are untouchable. I'd say, you know, the guys they drafted and signed this past year are pretty much the only ones. And then you throw in probably Kyle Long, and I don't really think Jay Cutler is going anywhere this offseason. So other than that, I mean, you're really going through this roster and making probably a ton of changes through the draft, and they have 9 draft picks. So there's 9 new faces right there, barring some trades. And then there's going to probably be plenty of action in free agency.
Adam Hogue covering the Bears for us is down in Tampa. The game against Lovie Smith and the Buccaneers is tomorrow. That's another little side show, I guess you could say about the game tomorrow. But you know, Adam, we were talking a little bit earlier about this team and just the fact that it's just not as talented as I think a lot of people may have been fooled into thinking it was. When John Fox came in and Ryan Pace came in, they could only clean up so much in such a little time from the other regime. Did we kind of get lulled into a sense of maybe this team was more talented than we thought because they were making this kind of move in the head coach and also in the GM?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's all about how you looked at it. I mean, I never really bought into the idea that they were all of a sudden had found all this talent. I just think that as they were winning some of those games and going, you know, for instance, going into Lambeau and beating Packers, they just really pointed to giving the credits to the coaching staff for getting these guys ready and sort of overachieving, which is what I really think they were doing when they were 5-6 or maybe fell down back to more realistic expectations the last 3 weeks. So, I think it's a good start. I think you've seen the signs of improvement with the coaching staff first and foremost, and that's really where I think Ryan Pace hit a home run immediately in the offseason last year was getting the hiring of John Fox. And then really, and a lot of that has to do with Fox and hiring the assistants, but this is a really good coaching staff they have. So, you know, here and there they added a piece. Pernell McPhee, I think, is a pretty good signing. Hopefully the knee doesn't continue to be a problem going into next year. And then there's, you know, some pieces in the draft. I think Eddie Goldman's going to be okay. I think Jeremy Langford's going to be okay. Really, it comes down to can Kevin White play and play at a high level like he should as the number 7 overall pick. So we're not going to know that till next year. So, you know, there's a lot more to happen and a lot more to come before we can really start evaluating where this whole thing is going big picture. But for this year, it's a start. That's what I would call it.
I enjoyed your piece on Forte. That was a hot topic of conversation on Wednesday about his contract situation, and you wrote about how he pretty much highlighted the issue, saying that there's nothing really to hope for, so he might be on the outside looking in as far as the future goes. But a name you just brought up, and that's Kevin White. A lot of people, a lot of fans are thinking, well, he'll be okay next year. You know, you'll essentially have 2 number 1 draft picks. Is there more concern than maybe the Bears are showing about his health going forward with Kevin White?
I don't think so, because I think he felt like he was ready to go. I think he felt like he could have played and contributed. So, to be honest, the way they shielded him from us and kind of went through different mixed messages they kept putting out there at different times and ultimately shutting him down, I mean, it's really hard to know where that leg is. I think ultimately, though, there wasn't any kind of setback after the surgery. I think things did go as planned, and I think ultimately when they considered that there was some atrophy in the leg compared to his healthy leg, it's okay to just shut him down and point towards next year. But it's still a fair question. Is he a good player? Now, I think he is, and with the very limited amount we got to see of him in the small portion of practice open in the media, he looked fast, he looked good, he showed those things that jumped off the page when you looked at the scouting report when they drafted him. So I think those things are still there. Unfortunately, you know, year one is a complete wash. Now you got 3 more years on that rookie deal, and we'll see pretty quickly next year if the guy can play. My guess is he can, and man, do they need somebody opposite of Alshon Jeffrey that can stretch the defense and get downfield.
Okay, you mentioned Jeffrey as we spent some few moments left with Adam Hoge, who covers the Bears for us here at WGN Radio. I mean, now the decisions in the offseason are not only for Tay. Obviously, Alshon Jeffrey, there's a decision to be made about him as well, but it would seem as though a franchise type of attack might be more appropriate for him to see if he's able to stay healthy and to stay on the field. I mean, but I don't envy the offseason coming up here for Ryan Pace. I mean, there's going to be some tough decisions that have to be made.
Yeah, there are going to be. And I think that Matt Forte, Martellus Bennett is another one. He's still got a year left on his contract, but there's no guaranteed money left. So you could easily, if you want to go in a different direction there, you can. I would be careful about that because I think Marty is a pretty good tight end. But with Alshon, I think why everyone's pointing to the franchise tag is this is a scenario where it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you're the Bears, I'm sure they'll come up with some kind of offer just in case Alshon wants to take it. But my guess here is that Alshon thinks he's going to point to, well, let me put it this way. The Bears are going to say, look, you can't stay healthy. You can't just throw all this money at you. That's a fair point. Alshon can come back and say, well, look how bad the Bears offense was when I wasn't on the field. I'm that important. So both sides have compelling arguments. And I don't know that based on the information we have at hand this year, the evidence and him not being on the field, but also being a pretty good football player, they're both there. So how do you agree to terms with that going on? That's why I think it really makes sense that this is going to be a tag situation. Whether or not they get something done before the July deadline, I don't know. But if not, you play under the tag, he's going to make a lot of money for 1 year, and he's going to get another chance to show the Bears that he's worth a ton of money.
We'll say goodbye to you on this thought. Do you have a favorite Lovie Smith memory or story? There's a bunch of them, and I've heard a lot this week. But anything that stands out in your mind?
You know, I think for me, I was on the beat the last 2 years, and I think that for me, it was just sort of, if I had to point to one memory, it'd be sort of that last week where there was a lot of speculation that if the Bears didn't get into the playoffs, that he would be let go. And it was kind of a weird week because, you know, you could tell that the players absolutely did not want that to happen. It could not have been more different than the scenario last year where everyone kind of knew it was coming and no one really cared with Mark Trestman. So that was just a weird week to cover. And then you go to the game was in Detroit and the Bears end up winning, but it came down to the Vikings Packer game. Which I think was being played at Lambeau, if I remember right. Maybe it was in Minnesota. But anyway, the Vikings ended up winning that game, and I was sitting in the Detroit airport watching that field goal go in, and you're wondering, are they going to the playoffs, or is Lovie probably going to get fired in the morning? And that's the direction it went.
If you follow the Adam Hoge pattern, this next year is the last one for John Fox because he had two with Lovie, two with Trestman, and two with John Fox.
Yeah, they talk about Brandon Marshall being a coach killer, huh?
At least Mel Tucker might win a ring, though, Adam. He might get a ring with Alabama.
Yes, that is. Have they decided on their defensive coordinator yet? Because I know he was in the mix to get the permanent job.
He wants it. I don't know if they want him.
Yeah, but
I wonder why.
Fair point. It would certainly be interesting though if Mel Tucker ends up as the defensive coordinator of the powerhouse college program out there.
Adam, thanks a lot, and try to enjoy the game tomorrow, will you?
All right. Talk to you guys later.
All right, Adam Hoge, covering the Bears for us here at 720 WGN.
Read the blog too, WGNRadio.com.
Absolutely, and I was around when Lovie got introduced. After Dick Geron was let go, and I'll never forget, we actually had a kind of the guys that were on the beat, so to speak, were invited up to have lunch with Lovie, and it went completely downhill from there.
Ooh,
spiraled out of control from that day. It was amazing.
I've heard horror stories about that last year, especially like Adam alluded to, the last half of the last year where he knew he was a dead man walking.
Yeah, and just tried to take advantage of it because of the fact that he was so popular amongst his players. And that's kind of how it went down. All right, we take a break, and we will begin to wrap things up here on the beat for a Saturday evening, 720 WGN. Those are the things as a DJ that used to give me a heart attack. False endings and false, things in a song.
Pregnant pauses.
Oh, it would be like, wait a minute.
Wait, what?
Is that song over already?
Got to control your moves.
I know.
You never know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Andy Mazur, Sam Panayotovich, wrapping things up here on The Beat. Hannah Stanley has joined us.
Hi, Hannah.
In the studio.
Hi, you guys. How are you?
We're good. We're good. Talking about pregnant pauses and me watching That 70s Show all night last night. And
which Mila was pregnant with Ashton Kutcher. Yeah. So that's a really bad.
That's where they met.
Bring it back home.
Her first kiss.
And she was apparently really, really young when that show started.
Right, because you had to be 18 to be on that show, I believe, at the time. And she was only 16.
Yeah.
And she lied. She had her agent lie about how old she was. I think she was only 14.
14
no,
or 15,
she. That's
yeah.
not. Really?
Oh, yeah. Yes. That's a true story.
Or maybe she had to be 16 and the agent said she was 16. But she was only 14 when she made her debut.
She was the youngest cast member by far, yeah.
And they were covering some topics that I understand why they wouldn't want a 14-year-old on that set.
And, you know, that rough and tumble area, Point Place, Wisconsin.
A lot of that going on.
Yeah.
On that 70s
show.
That
was a validly good show.
Talking about asthma, right?
Oh, loved it. Yeah.
Okay. Asthma.
Yeah. My pacemaker.
Pneumonia. Bronchitis.
Boy, we have covered a whole lot of topics here on
COPD.
A short 4-hour show.
Whirlwind. Andy, and the new idea coming out of this show is that Andy wants me to be the next Spieth. Like the next, Andy wants me to become a golfer and all
of a
sudden
golfer.
Become a prodigy.
Because
I'm awful at golf.
Yeah,
who would fill your shoes here?
I don't know.
I think he could do both. I think he's that talented that he could do both.
There's a lot of weekend golfing.
Yeah, but you can play in the morning. I mean, you can play early.
Tournament play.
That's the best time to get out there.
Necessarily.
I don't get that. Like, you know, I've got some friends that are like, "Yeah, we're gonna hit the links at 7 a.m." And I'm like, oh, "I'm getting home at 4. I don't want to go golf at 7.
But see, that gives you a built-in excuse.
See, when my husband lived in Colorado, he would. I mean, it's just not a morning guy at all.
Me either.
At all.
No.
But man, once ski season started. He was like, I am up. We are doing this. We've got to be on the road by 6 because we've got to be at this. And I was like, who are you when you can't get to work on time?
Hey, when it comes to golf.
Yeah, but snow is skiing and golfing and all those sports. You got to get up early.
Those are very important things.
That's why I never did either.
I get up for breakfast and then I eat breakfast and go back to bed.
That's very funny.
That's
impressive.
I
mean, that's how it works.
That's do not have children because that goes away until they're like 5.
I've been told.
Yeah, that's okay. We actually we had the chillins, the 7 and 5-year-old today, woke us up so they could go. Can we go downstairs? And we're like, yeah, of course. It's the day after Christmas. You're no longer forbidden to go downstairs. but they got up at like 7 so they could build Legos.
Oh, cool.
But then they needed help with one particular part. And my daughter was like, Dad, can you just come help me with the staircase? And then you can come right back to bed. And we're like, wow, does she know you?
That's not awesome. It doesn't always work, though. Once you're up,
Once you're up, you're up.
I was big into Legos.
Legos are great.
I was pretty good at it, actually.
I used to date a Lego
Are you a master builder?
Master Lego, man, yeah.
Yeah. Did you like the Lego movie?
You know, I never bothered to see that. I don't want to see my toys come to life. It scares me a little bit.
It's not that though. It's a really well done movie.
Maybe I will.
So the Legos don't like have a hoagie.
No, they
like...
do. But it's different because they're the whole movie. It's not like they're. I don't. It's hard to explain. It's really well done though. I enjoyed it. I myself watch it without needing to have children.
I would have wished to have known this last night, so I wouldn't have spent all that time watching That 70s Show.
Yeah.
He put in an 8-hour marathon
easily. It might have been longer. I was just embarrassed to admit it at the time.
All right, so here's the thing. I got for Christmas a box set of Quantum Leap.
I remember that show, Scott Bakula.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, why? I don't. And then my brother was super excited to give it to me, which got me more excited. But I was like, wow, I don't know that I'm going to have this kind of time. But now I have the box set, so I can watch it at my leisure.
Binge watch, yeah.
Yeah.
You watch it on your watch. Can you do that yet? No. I can watch things on my phone.
I don't know. So I can watch things on the phone and the iPad and the laptop. I have not figured out if I can watch it on my watch.
See, here's another question that came up throughout the show, and this is perfect that we can ask you.
I listened to the show. I missed all these questions.
So did we.
We did too.
I missed a couple as well. Adam Warren was traded from the Yankees to the Cubs.
Right, and how did he find out? I missed that.
Because
got it on my car.
His wife told him when we're on vacation... our phones go off. So he had the phone off for 2 days while the Yankees were trying to get a hold of him to trade him. And he found out by watching at a restaurant on the bottom of the screen.
On the scroll?
That he had been traded to the Cubs.
That's awesome.
The question is, can you go dark for 2-3 days on a phone?
Could I?
Could you?
Absolutely.
I don't know if I could.
Yeah, me too. as I'm showing you, my phone lit up already.
It's a long time, Hannah.
I can't go 2 hours.
We did a cruise last year, and we're going to do a cruise again, and the phones don't work. So, yeah, I mean, That's true. I don't pay for Wi-Fi when I'm on a cruise. It just is stupid.
So, you know, you have to turn your phone off or put it in airplane mode when you go on the plane, right? So it's a 4 hour, say you have a 4 hour trip. First thing I go for when we land.
Phone. Oh, and wheels down.
Yeah.
Wheels down. That phone is legally okay to be on.
It's ridiculous.
I know family Christmas parties are starting to get a little crazy, too, because you've got the grandparents who just want to hang out with their grandkids, yeah. and they've got, you know, they're playing, you know, Mario Kart or whatever the kids are playing these days.
No. Sonic. You got to build the Lego with the kids to have the quality time.
What is coming up on Girls Night Out?
So much. Dr. John Duffy, you know him and love him from seeing him on the Steve Harvey Show. So that might come up.
Happy Easter.
Happy Halloween.
So that might come up. He is actually in studio and will be for a good portion, if not the entire show. Gosh, we're talking about all kinds of seasonal depression and like how you work through that or avoid it entirely. The Steve Harvey stuff and resolutions, et cetera, et cetera.
Joining a gym.
Happy Easter, y'all.
Yeah.
Happy Easter.
My New Year's resolution will not change.
And he wants to get taller.
I want to be taller.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to floss more.